and gentlemen, to the War Room. Just an absolutely huge show we have for you today. Major developments on practically every front. Breaking news coming in hot and fast. Donald Trump is live right now at a Black History Month event, signing some sort of executive order. We can check in on that, but I don't think it's anything particularly newsworthy, not with everything else going on today. So we'll get into it. War with Iran, again, seems imminent, but it has for a year. So we'll check in on that. And just a ton of videos to go to. And we'll be joined in the third hour by Jason Jones, who's been doing a lot of work with the Palestinians in the West Bank as they are being annexed by Israel. Very excited to talk to him in the third hour. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. Here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 18th of February, 2026. Les Wexner has been deposed by House Oversight Committee over Epstein ties. Democratic members of the House Oversight Committee questioned former CEO Les Wexner on Wednesday morning at his home in Ohio as part of their investigation into affiliates of Jeffrey Epstein, the billionaire's former associate. We'll show you the written statement he made as well as comments from the congressman following the questioning. For some reason, not a single Republican apparently showed up for this. So it was just Democrats questioning Les Wexner, despite the fact that there's a lot of supposedly and seemingly really good Republicans on the House Oversight Committee. None of them bothered to show up. So we'll look into that. Meanwhile, allegations in Epstein files may account to, quote, crimes against humanity, UN experts say. Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein files released suggest the existence of a, quote, global criminal enterprise that carried out acts meeting the legal threshold of crimes against humanity, according to a panel of independent experts appointed by the United Nations Human Rights Council. So obviously the Human Rights Council and the UN itself has to go. It has to all go. It's anti-Semitic. We have to get rid of it. Meanwhile, Trump moves closer to major war with Iran. The Trump administration is closer to a major war in the Middle East than most Americans realize. It could begin very soon, as in within the next 12 hours, some say. A U.S. military operation in Iran would likely be a massive weeks-long campaign that would look more like full-fledged war than last month's pinpoint operation in Venezuela, sources say. And we'll break that down. Again, it's, I don't know, it's looking an awful lot like we're gearing up for an attack against Iran. But like I said, it's looked that way for a while. I mean, I was going through some old papers from like 2 weeks ago yesterday, and the headlines are exactly the same as the ones we have now. You know, major aircraft carrier task force moving towards the Strait of Hormuz. So, you know, we've been playing this game of chicken for a while, maybe finally coming to a head. Then we have this: distraught family blasts Canada for euthanizing son, 26, who suffered from, quote, seasonal depression. Keanu Vafarin, a 26-year-old blind man with type 1 diabetes, died in December using Canada's MAID program, which allows patients with, quote, grievous and irredeemable medical conditions to request a lethal drug. Eligibility was expanded in 2021 to include people with chronic illnesses, disabilities, and pending parliamentary review, potentially individuals with certain mental health conditions. This 26-year-old faced mental health struggles stemming from a car accident at 17, and he had seasonal depression, where his depression would flare in the winter months. And this winter, Canada decided to kill him, so now he's dead. We have this also on the war front. Second day of talks on Russia-Ukraine war ends after only 2 hours, but it is looking like Zelensky, at least, is coming to terms with the fact that he's going to have to settle for peace pretty soon because he just keeps losing, and that's not going to change anytime soon. Finally, Tucker Carlson has been, or was briefly, detained in Israel. Journalists, quote, dragged into interrogation room as explosive interview sparks diplomatic firestorm. The former Fox News host flew into Tel Aviv for a sit-down with Mike Huckabee, who challenged Carson to speak to him directly following the online spat about the country's treatment of Christians. And he apparently was detained and not allowed to exit the airport. We'll show you more of that on the other side. Stay with us. It's The War Room, InfoWars.com.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on InfoWars.com, band.video, and, of course, streaming on X. Make sure you're following us at InfoWars, at Real Alex Jones. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. We have some breaking news here. Just broke minutes ago. Tucker Carlson detained in Israel. Journalist dragged into an interrogation room as explosive interview sparks diplomatic firestorm. The former Fox News host flew into Tel Aviv for a sit-down with Mike Huckabee, who challenged Carlson to speak to him directly following an online spat about the country's treatment of Christians. Carlson, who also frequently criticizes Israel for its military actions in Gaza, took Huckabee up on his offer. But as critics and pro-Israel activists began piling on Carlson for purportedly not leaving the airport during his brief visit, he revealed that he was met with hostility in the Middle Eastern country. Carlson told the Daily Mail exclusively that shortly after the interview, Israeli officials confiscated his passport and hauled off his executive producer to an interrogation room. Men who identified themselves as airport security took our passports, hauled our executive producer into a side room, and demanded to know what we spoke to Ambassador Huckabee about. Carson told the Daily Mail, it was bizarre. We are now out of the country. Prior to the interview, Carson posted a photo on X of himself and his business partner, Neil Patel, in front of Ben Gurion Airport on Wednesday with the caption, greetings from Israel. Tucker Carlson said he and his staff were detained at Ben Gurion Airport and interrogated by Israeli officials following that interview with U.S. Ambassador Mike Huckabee. Huckabee, who's known Carlson for over three decades and previously worked with him at Fox News, invited Carlson to Israel to discuss their differences. Too bad Tucker stayed in the airport in the face of so many invitations to see so many wonderful places. A huge and obviously intentionally missed opportunity, taunted David Friedman, a former U.S. ambassador to Israel during Trump's first term. Two sources familiar with the matter, however, say told the Daily Mail that the Israeli government initially did not want to allow Carlson into the country, prompting a delegate negotiation involving the State Department. In the end, the Israeli government decided not to bar Carlson from entering the country in order to avoid a diplomatic incident, according to Channel 13 report. I don't know if there would have been a diplomatic incident. I don't see how that would have played out exactly. I mean, we've seen the way that American journalists can be treated by our supposed allies. They can kill them, and America won't do anything about it. Gonzalo Lira comes to mind. He, of course, was an American journalist in Ukraine trying to flee that country when he was arrested and didn't escape with his life. We never heard a word about it. Do you think it'd be any different with Tucker Carlson? Do you think if Tucker Carlson was actually, like, arrested by Israel and taken to one of their rape prisons, do you think America would have actually said anything about that? I seriously doubt it. I feel like they would have been like, well, that's what you get. That's what you get for speaking out against Israel. What do you expect? So I don't know. I mean, I think this was maybe just an act of mercy by Israel. Maybe we should be thanking Israel, because I think if they wanted to arrest and torture and kill Tucker Carlson, I seriously doubt the American government would ever do anything about that. I think that's the situation that we're in, actually. And I think it's telling that our greatest ally, who depends on us for absolutely everything, will keep out the most popular American broadcaster because he simply insults them. Not exactly surprising, but just another indication of, where we stand in the minds of Israel. instead of talking about me, why don't you come talk to me, Huckabee wrote on X about a month ago. Carlson replied by welcoming the invitation before noting they were working on setting up the interview. Israel's popularity remains at an all-time low in the GOP among Republican voters and Trump supporters. The Carson Huckabee event was reportedly an attempt by the Trump administration to prevent debates surrounding Israel from breaking the GOP's conservative coalition ahead of the midterms. Yeah, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's going to work because you see the people of America don't like Israel and have very good reasons to not like Israel because of their actions, their behavior, their continuing treatment of innocent people in Palestine. And also, we're about to go to war with Iran on their behalf, and they're not even trying to trick us. They're not even trying to convince us that this is in any way beneficial for America or necessary for America. They're just telling us they're going to war with Iran and calling you anti-Semitic if you disagree, I guess. Now, there's a post on 4chan that was getting a lot of attention yesterday. I don't know how much attention to give it, but this rings true. And supposedly this person who posted this first comment had posted things before that showed that he did have some sort of inside information. But this is an anonymous post that was going around yesterday. He says, I posted yesterday with a 36-hour timeline. We are now in the 24-hour window. Look for a significant number of Iranian leadership to be exterminated. The leadership of Iran is made up of a secret council of 22 military and political leaders who meet regularly in bunkers in Tehran, or a bunker in Tehran. One of their members is a Mossad agent. Needless to say, this group goes first. Israel knows after the last few years, this is the time to end this show, and tactical nukes will take out most of Iran's missile infrastructure in the first strike. Tehran will go in the first wave in a false flag attack set up for Israel to kick things off. Cheers. And then somebody else responds, Venezuela was a test for what's happening in Iran. A large part of the Iranian military and leadership will be vaporized in the opening salvos. Israel will use tactical nukes to take out Iranian missiles and their bases. We are about T-minus 3 days now. So I was posted yesterday. Again, we don't know if this person has any inside information, but if you're just playing this out in your head, the only way that an attack on Iran makes any sense at all is if it looks an awful lot like the way this was described. We saw last June the way that Iranian missiles were able to blow right through the Iron Dome and score massive hits on Israel. And I don't even think they were trying that hard. I think if they really thought this is it, the fight for our survival, and just unleash their hundreds of thousands of missiles, it's not going to go well. So the only way to go after Iran, I mean, you're seeing the way they do it, right? Fomenting rebellion internally, putting them in a untenable economic position, and then pressuring them, and then having, you know, agitators go in and start violence and trying to create a groundswell color revolution to weaken the power structure there. Or you'd have to go in and just like kill all of the leadership. And I don't even know how well that would work, but it would have to be combined with something like tactical nukes hitting the missile warehouse. But again, while I don't know how legitimate that inside information is, I think that's sort of the best explanation of what this attack may very well look like. Times of Israel has the article, U.S.-Iran war could be imminent and take weeks, sources warn after latest nuclear talks. A military confrontation between the U.S. and Iran could begin in the coming days as an intensive multi-week campaign, sources said Wednesday, despite ongoing diplomatic talks between Washington and Tehran. Former IDF military intelligence chief Amos Yadlin suggested Wednesday that such confrontation could be imminent. Last week, I allowed myself to fly out to the Munich Security Conference. I would think twice about flying this weekend, Yadlin told Channel 12 News on Wednesday, a day after the second round of nuclear talks was held in Geneva. We are much closer than we were before, but I remind you, a superpower does not go to war in a matter of days. There is a diplomatic path that must be exhausted, said Yadlin, who now heads a national security consultancy. He said that many oppose the attack. The Pentagon is not clear that they want it, what they want it to achieve. The president is very determined. The statement is that all options are on the table, is based on a credible military threat, which comes alongside the preparations off the coast of Iran and in the skies. New York Times has this article by Thomas L. Friedland. Netanyahu plays Trump and American Jews for fools again, saying, let's stop beating around the bush. Israel's far-right government, led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, is spitting in America's face and telling us it's raining. It's not raining. Bibi is playing both President Trump and American Jews for fools. And if the U.S. lets him get away with it, we are fools. While keeping Trump focused on the Iranian missile and nuclear threat, which, though reduced, is still very real and will have to be dealt with diplomatically or militarily, Bibi is fundamentally threatening broader U.S. interests in the Middle East, not to mention the security of Jews all over the world. In what way? I cannot put it more succinctly than Ehud Olmert, the former Israeli prime minister, did when he said, quote, a violent and criminal effort is underway to ethnically cleanse territories in the West Bank, he wrote in an essay in Haaretz this month. Gangs of armed settlers persecute, harm, wound, and even kill Palestinians living there. The rampages inside burning olive groves, houses, and cars, breaking into homes, and physically assaulting people. The rioters, the Jewish terrorists, storm Palestinians with hate and violence with one objective, to force them to flee their homes. All this is done with the hopes of that the land will be prepared for Jewish settlement en route to realizing the dreams of annexing all the territories. Israel's accelerating attempts towards annexation in the West Bank and to permanently remain in Gaza and deny Palestinians political rights in both areas are as morally reckless and demographically insane as would the U.S. annexing Mexico. If it were just Israelis who were going to be hurt by the crazy fantasy that some 7 million Israeli Jews can control 7 million Palestinian Arabs in perpetuity, I might be tempted to say that if Israel's leaders want to commit national suicide, I can't stop them. But the effects will not be confined to Israel. I believe this is a messianically driven endeavor that will make today's Israel permanently indistinguishable from apartheid South Africa and will have serious detrimental implications for both American interests and the interests of security of Jews all over the world. And folks, this is not an unintended consequence. It's, in fact, as far as I can tell, an intended consequence. We can go to clip number 31 here. This is former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, sort of reflecting the statement that we've been playing recently from Benjamin Netanyahu, telling all Jewish Americans that it's basically time to reject your Americanism and fight back against your country, okay? Here's Naftali Bennett saying something very similar, but perhaps even more disturbing. Let's watch. 31.
So we have to build a lot of assets, so they need us a lot. Because I've come to one conclusion, they're not going to love us. The aspiration that the world will love Israel, it's not going to happen. What we need is that our enemies fear us, our friends respect us, and everyone needs us. We tried the love us thing for about 3,000 years. Didn't work.
Okay, how hard did you try? How hard did you really try? Can you tell me that? So, I mean, I don't know how else to take this other than like a declaration of war, right? He's like, yeah, we're not interested in being loved anymore. We just want to be feared. It's like, okay, well, nobody's actually scared of you. You don't even do your own fighting. I mean, it's been over 2 years at this point. You haven't even taken out Hamas. Hamas is in Gaza, which is a completely like open air prison. You control absolutely the flow of everything in or out. You have just total freedom of action over the entire place. And like you still didn't even beat them. So, and now you're going to go to war with Iran. Like this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous in a lot of ways, but I guess the same thing I was saying about Netanyahu yesterday or the day before, where it's just like, what is your problem? What is your problem? When you look around at the world over the last couple decades, do you see a lot of hatred of the Jews, or do you see, especially in America, Jews thriving, doing amazing, getting at the top of like every industry? Like it's been fine, right? It's been fine. But now that you've been engaged in a 2-year genocide, just brutally killing or starving children, people don't like that. and they've transmuted that into, see, they're never going to love us. We tried so hard, you guys. We tried so hard to play along, but it's just never going to happen. And just remember, like, this is a key component of their entire psychological operation. The entire worldview has to be convince you, has to be to convince you that anti-Semitism is unnatural. It just appears. There's nothing anybody can do about it. Because if they actually acknowledge the reality that people don't like Israel because of their actions, then they could change their actions and just be normal like other countries, but they just absolutely refuse to do that and are now basically saying we don't want to be loved, we just want to be feared. So, great. We'll see how that works out for you. And by the way, just exactly like I was saying last week, when I was saying, do you think, like, play it through your head. Let's just say, and I don't even know how this works, but imagine a situation in which we actually take out Iran. Somehow, you know, a couple months from now, the Iranian leadership has been completely decapitated. We have some Reza Pahlavi or somebody sitting on the throne. Do you think that's the end of it? Do you think it's like, okay, peace now. Now we can deal with the illegal immigrants and we can deal with all this other stuff. No, it's just going to be on to the next one, on to the next enemy, on to the next, you know, danger, existential crisis for the people of the West, the freedom lovers of the world. So clip number 14, where in the same speech, former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett says, actually, you know, we're about to be finished with Iran, and then Turkey's going to be our next Iran. And pay attention to the lack of applause when he says this. Clip 34. Let's watch. Clip 34.
New Turkish threat is emerging. I want to be very clear. Turkey and Qatar have gained influence in Syria, are seeking influence elsewhere and everywhere throughout the region. And from here, I warn, Turkey is the new Iran. Erdogan is sophisticated, dangerous, and he seeks to encircle Israel. We can't close our eyes again.
You insane idiots.
And while some senior Israelis...
I mean, my God. Wait, no, we can take it down. I don't want to hear anything more from him. But like, I just love that there's just like no applause. Like, he stops as if there's going to be applause. He's like, Turkey is the new Iran. You just imagine everybody like, what? What? No, Iran still exists. What are you talking about? Yeah, obviously we're going to keep the war going as soon as we get what we want, but don't tell everybody that. Don't go announcing it. Okay, so Turkey's going to be the next Iran. And then once they take out Turkey, what do you think is going to be the next Iran after that? Germany? What do you think is going to be the next Gaza, the next Palestine? All of Europe, if I had to guess? America itself? Suddenly the... you know, they'll send America to war with Iran. Iran will use their hypersonic missiles to, you know, blow apart the aircraft carriers. Tens of thousands of Americans will die. That will naturally have the consequence of making Americans hate Israel more. And so then they'll be able to basically say, look, America, it's hopeless. They're so anti-Semitic. There's nothing we can do about this. I guess they're the new Palestinians. Now they're trying to kill us and they won't rest until we're all dead. We have to defeat them first. Please, China, won't you help us? Won't you defend us from the evil Americans? See, I have the feeling that this whole war in Iran thing is designed to kick off World War III with the express intention of destroying America once and for all, and moving more towards the east with Israel as the capital of a one-world government. Have I mentioned this before? Because everything keeps aligning to it. Perfectly, and as if it's a giant script being followed. Let's go down to clip number 8. This is former CIA officer John Curacao talking about a conversation he had with Colonel Douglas McGregor about Iran's hypersonic missiles. Let's go to clip 8.
I was talking to Colonel Doug McGregor a few days ago about Iran's hypersonic missiles, and I said, Doug, I'm not a military guy. I don't know the details of these. Programs. Can an aircraft carrier defend itself from a hypersonic missile? And he said, no. There's no defense from a hypersonic missile. Well, the Iranians have hypersonics. The Chinese and the Russians gave them the technology and they developed it internally, domestically. An aircraft carrier is the size of a city. It has 25,000 sailors on it. Can you imagine if they sank one of those things? Or even just damaged it to the point where it would have to be towed into port for 2 years worth of repairs? I just see nothing good coming of an armed conflict with Iran. And I will say, and this may be a fault of mine, but I'm an eternal optimist. I will say that both the White House and the Iranians last week said, after the first round of indirect talks in Muscat, that progress was made.
Well, whatever progress was made is not stopping the buildup of armaments, not just from America, by the way, in the Middle East. Russia and China are very much involved in all of this. In fact, we can go to clip 25 here as B-roll. China assisting Iran with intel surveillance, and they have moved one of their gigantic signal intercepting ships towards the Strait of Hormuz. You also have Russia getting involved. Clip 5 here we can use as B-roll. Russian warships arrive at Bandar Abbas for surprise exercises with Iran, set to start near the Hormuz choke point amid U.S. warships' presence. So Russia and China are both sort of meeting the ante and matching the energy of America as we send just enormous amounts of military hardware into the Middle East. Iran is openly preparing for war with the U.S. in case talks collapse. Iran right now is deploying forces to the Strait of Hormuz. They're reviving, quote, Mosaic Defense, which is a decentralized military command designed to survive leadership strikes. They're fortifying their nuclear sites, as can be seen by satellite surveillance. They're hardening their air defenses and expanding domestic crackdowns to prevent unrest. So they are very much getting ready for the war, as they believe it's coming very soon. Look, if I was Iran, I don't know what to say other than, like, if I was Iran, I wouldn't wait. I don't know. It's like, and again, this is the thing. How are we even supposed to talk to Iran when every time they've entered into talks before us, we have pulled the rug out from underneath them? It almost doesn't matter how well the talks are going at this point. They've been poisoned from the beginning because of Israel, because every time we try to negotiate with somebody in the Middle East, Israel blows up their negotiators or bombs their embassy or starts straight up war with them. And so Iran is not incentivized to believe anything that we say or come to any sort of agreement, least of all the agreements that we're attempting to foist on them, which is telling them to completely and totally disarm themselves. Why would they do that? They're obviously not going to do that, especially not when, if they were to do that, the only thing guaranteeing their safety are the promises of America and Israel, the people that lie constantly about everything all the time. Like, this is the potentially, like, world-ending scenario that was kind of an inevitability from the very first time that Iran tried to enter into talks in good faith, only to have their ambassadors or their negotiators or their homeland bombed to hell by Israel and America. So, I mean, we're just going to have to fight. I think we've screwed it up too much. We've already screwed up the diplomatic solution by being liars.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said, sure, he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. The first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue. And then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah. I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle. You gave me, it's great. It totally makes it, you can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshow.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but
and you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
It's throughout. I see RFKs on it. Yeah, I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy. But it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really
It skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible, and they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I got to get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimate Methylene Blue, TheOxygenStore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, it was like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to a physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it around SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychotic. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'll be like a restaurant. I ain't going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone.
First in my scope is BAE Systems. Specialize in killing people from a distance. Power is a drug and they feed the addiction. Immediate deletion of people's existence. Who says what isn't legitimate resistance? To push these buttons, you don't need a brave heart. State of the art darts leave more than your face scarred. You might impress an A&R with your fake bars. Cause you probably think Rolls Royce only make cars. This is for the colonizers.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. We are talking war. The big one. World War III. The inevitable. The unnecessary. We're not going to spend too much more time on this. So I'll just give you a rundown of just like why I think this is not looking like a bunch of bluster. It's looking like it may very well be actually happening this time, whether we like it or not. But we're going to be talking a lot more about Israel in the third hour with Jason Jones. We'll talk about the West Bank and the way that Israel expelling people. So we got a lot of domestic news to get into, but finishing up with what's going on in Iran. Let's go to clip number six here. This is Colonel Douglas McGregor basically saying that there's very little chance of a diplomatic outcome that's positive. Let's go to Douglas McGregor here.
No, I don't think there's any chance at this stage for any sort of agreement with the Iranians, because we can't compromise on the points that Benjamin Netanyahu provided to us. These are Netanyahu's conditions. Let's not lose sight of this. Let's get back to the facts. We are the instrument of Israeli power and international finance right now in its war with BRICS and the countries that refuse to submit to, as they have for many decades, to our financial domination. This is not all about territory. It is about resources, but preeminently finance. So I don't see anything resolving itself without a fight. And well, for Iran, let's be frank, the only thing they've got to do is endure, persist, outlast. That's their goal. They need to inflict some damage on us too, but they've got to persist and exist. If they can't, they're finished.
All right, folks. Alex Jones in studio with me. Just talked to, I don't know.
Yeah, I talked to Tucker's producer. They don't want to be overly dramatic. The story's true. And they seem pissed off after the interview with
Huckabee.
Yeah, but it just shows the mindset, like the arrogance, that Kiriakou talks about.
Yeah.
They still didn't want to make a big deal about it. Yeah, blah, blah. And they were like, well, you know, who knows, maybe, you know, Netanyahu has his own opposition over there. Maybe they did it to, like, make a story, because Netanyahu doesn't really control the airport, you know, police. But it did happen. So I shot a live report on X about 5 minutes ago. They're going to give it to you so you can air it, and I'll give you the inside baseball. But, yes, the story's true. It did happen. And you talk about arrogance. I mean, you talk about tripod here. This is just emblematic of the arrogance of Israel. I mean, what a dumb move.
Yeah.
To make the interview 10 times bigger. But it was a pretty fiery interview. So as soon as you have that, they're downloading it now. It's on X. You can play for people.
So they did get the interview, because I wasn't sure. I thought maybe he got kicked out.
No. He was leaving.
Okay.
And they grabbed him. And they're like, don't make a big deal about it. Yeah, well, they're mad. Yeah. But, you know, because that's not their angle. But I was like, yeah, there it is. It's so ridiculous.
It's
like,
yeah,
thanks for the Streisand effect, dumbasses.
Yeah, nobody would even know Tucker Carlson was in Israel if they hadn't arrested him. That's okay. But yeah, typical. You know, not exactly a surprise. They seem.
That's where you get the word
chutzpah. Chutzpah, yeah, exactly. Well, and I don't know. It's like the paranoia where it's like, oh, we have to stop Tucker from talking about us. And it's like, what is he going to find? He's going to go to Israel. He's probably going to go stay in a nice hotel downtown. He's going to talk to Mike Huckabee. What are you scared of? What's he going to expose by visiting? The only way you look bad out of this is by doing what you just did. So it's like, it's this hyper paranoia where they're like, oh, we can't let Tucker in. And it's like, okay, but by doing that, you look bad. You wouldn't look bad if Tucker just got to go to Israel. How many times have you heard Tucker just praise Israel? I mean, he loves the place. I don't think that's changed. He still says it's his favorite place to go to vacation. Probably not anymore, I would guess. But it's just, it's emblematic. It's emblematic of all this stuff where it's just like, just stop oppressing people. Stop abusing Tucker Carlson and nobody will care. Why they keep doing this to themselves. It's so infuriating. But I want to, again, tell you just why I think we need to talk, because like I just said, I was going through some old papers from a week ago. The headlines look exactly the same. Trump sends major, you know, aircraft carrier force to Strait of Hormuz, war with Iran imminent. I'm not trying to just like, you know, tell you that stuff's happening over and over and it never actually happens. But I'll tell you, Trump told Tucker Carlson to tone down Israel rhetoric. Well, he tried. It sounds like he tried. He tried to go interview Mike Huckabee. But of course, Wall Street Journal has a headline, Iran getting ready for war with the U.S., confronting its biggest threat in decades. The regime in Tehran is trying to boost its odds of survival if diplomatic talks fall through. And you can see here where they are hardening some of their nuclear sites as well as some of their, you know, better known military installations. That can be seen from satellite imagery. Israel on high alert as officials assess imminent U.S. strike on Iran, according to the Security Cabinet. Officials assess that U.S. President Donald Trump is inclined to launch a broad military strike on Iran soon after Tehran failed to meet American demands in negotiations. Officials in the Trump administration believe the Iranians are trying to stall and mislead the United States. On Wednesday, a diplomatic source was quoted by Al Jazeera by saying that saying that American patience with Iran delays may run out faster than Tehran thinks. And so in Israel, they are sending out alerts to their officials. Don't fly this weekend and, you know, be prepared for red alert lockdown. Final pieces moving into place for potential Iraq attack on Iran. That's from TWZ newsletter. A large wave of American air power is headed towards the Middle East to bolster forces already there as U.S. President Donald Trump considers an attack on Iran. Online flight trackers are showing F-22 Raptors, F-16 Fighting Falcons, E-3 Sentry radar planes, and a U-2 Dragon Lady spy plane, either in transit across the Atlantic or newly arrived in Europe. In addition, the 7th Arleigh Burke-class guided missile destroyer, the USS Pinckney, has recently deployed to the U.S. Central Command Area of Responsibility, AOR, as well, U.S. Navy officials told us. So this already, as of yesterday, was the biggest buildup of military equipment in the Middle East since the first Gulf War. Operation Iraqi Freedom, I guess, or it was the other one, but regardless, in decades, and now it's doubled. So that's a lot. That's a hell of a lot. U.S. talks with Iran reportedly fall apart. Is war coming? This is from JoeHoft.com, published today. The talks between the U.S. and Iran are reportedly not moving forward. Is war in the near future? The talks between the U.S. and Iran are reportedly not moving in the right direction in Geneva. In a report coming out of Israel, the talks between the U.S. and Iran's mullahs are not where they need to be, and it will be difficult to move further along the path of negotiations because the Iranians will not agree to what Trump wants. In Israel, they are convinced that the president wants an attack, as do his close circle, and therefore believe he must show that he has exhausted every opportunity for negotiations. Which, again, all of this is so weird because, as far as I can tell, I mean, obviously it's Israel that wants this attack. And it doesn't seem like Trump is exactly eager. It's just like portrayed as if it's like Trump, like, I just want to attack. And Israel, like, well, hold on, let's calm down. It's literally the complete opposite of what's happening. But apparently, talks not going in the right direction. Iran and Russia have announced a joint naval exercise in the Gulf of Oman, that is the Strait of Hormuz, tomorrow. The announcement, first reported by Iran's semi-official Fars news agency earlier today, highlights objectives like enhancing maritime security, combating terrorism, and boosting operational coordination between the two navies. Iranian Commander Captain Hassan Maksoudul described the exercise as a way to expand joint maritime cooperation and strengthen coordination. So again, you see, you know, the most important thing about this is it's a statement from Russia about whether or not they'll get involved, and they're sending a clear signal that they're not going to stay on the sidelines if combat were to break out fully. Joint Iranian-Russian naval exercise in Sea of Oman tomorrow was the headline from earlier today. Also, the Russian Doomsday Airplane, a hardened airborne command and control node that is designed to ensure real-time strategic decision-making, landed on February 16th in Tehran. The airplane is capable of secure data link and encrypted satellite communications, as well as a electromagnetic shielding that is designed for the continuity of government operations during high-intensity conflict. The flight route over the Caspian Sea, instead of through potentially hostile airspace, could be a sign of high-level state engagements involving defense ministers, intelligence chiefs, or presidential envoys. Overall, it's dispatching of such a military asset indicates Russia's prioritization of its relationship with Iran. So that 2 days ago arrived in Tehran to be a mobile command center, should it be necessary. U.S. military deployment in the Middle East in anticipation of a possible military operation against Iran from yesterday. You can see just the sheer amount of military weaponry we have on the ground there. That was yesterday. It apparently has doubled in the last 24 hours. I'll show you that in just a second. The majority of U.S. air assets are deployed to the Middle East and are stationed at military bases in Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the UAE. It will not be a peaceful Ramadan in the Middle East, they say. U.S. bases on high alert for attack by Iran. U.S. military buildup has doubled in less than 8 hours since I last published my last update. This is from Egypt's Intel Observer. 12 F-22 Raptor stealth fighter jets are now en route for deployment. 6 have already arrived at RAF Lankenheath, and the remaining 6 are expected to arrive there shortly before continuing on to the Middle East, likely Al Udeid Air Base, which hosted F-22 deployments in the past. 36 F-16 fighter jets have arrived. 2 more E-3 Sentry AWACS aircraft are preparing to depart for Ramstein Air Base, where they will join 2 others that arrived earlier today. 1 E-11A Battlefield Airborne Communication Node, BACN aircraft with the tail number 22-90-46 is scheduled to arrive at Ramstein Air Base in Germany before heading to the Middle East. Finally, a U-2 Dragon Lady reconnaissance aircraft departed RAF Fairford in the UK and was reportedly heading towards the Middle East. It may be deployed to Cyprus or Prince Sultan Air Base. It's worth noting that U-2 plays a key role in communication bridge between F-22s and F-35s. Trump's armada for the Middle East now includes 2 aircraft carriers, a dozen warships, hundreds of jets, and advanced air defenses, with more forces still en route. Over 150 U.S. military cargo flights have delivered weapons to the Middle East, and in the last 24 hours alone, 50 more fighter jets headed to the region, Axios reports. Did you see why I'm saying that this might be a little bit different this time? This is not a small-scale anything. Even just to move these planes represents a commitment of millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And every one of these things that they're moving, yes, they are moving them to be an asset and an offensive weapon in an attack against Iran, but moving it to that region also inevitably and in a de facto way makes it a target, a potential destruction by Iran. So to even move these to the Middle East represents, I think, an indication that they are committed to some sort of military interaction. China is assisting Iran with intel surveillance and real-time tracking through satellites to expose U.S. military buildups and position into open-source tracking for Iran military. China is effectively serving as Iran's advanced surveillance and reconnaissance partner, providing satellite imagery, navigation support, and possibly real-time intelligence, including access to the Baidu navigation system as an alternative to the U.S.-controlled GPS amid heightened U.S.-Iran tensions. Unconfirmed claims point to real-time data sharing on U.S. naval and Air Force movements, potentially leveling the playing field for Iran against superior U.S. forces. Again, 25 air tankers have just made their way to the Middle East. The U.S. wants as many aircraft as possible in the air against Iran, knowing that air bases may be at risk. The question is how Iran will take out the tankers and weaken the U.S. Air Force. So, that, again, it's just a lot. That's a lot of information I just dropped for you. But it all points to one ultimate conclusion. We are building up in the Middle East in a way intended to send the message that we are ready to fight. Now, that all could be to facilitate the negotiations. This could all be bluff. This could all be saber rattling to get the best leverage in talks with Iran. Or it could be because we're about to go to war with them. I guess we'll wait and see. But they're not giving us a reason as to why we might want to go to war with Iran. They aren't even bothering to false flag us or anything. They're just sort of doing it. And let's go to clip 45 here, just again to reiterate what a big deal this is and how there's absolutely no way that this goes smoothly or quickly or anything. There's no way that an attack on Iran is going to be a repeat of what happened in June, which, as much as I was against it then, was managed in a way that didn't spiral out to a wider conflict. I don't think that's going to be the case this time. And here's a video explaining one of the reasons why.
I understand. Russia, China, and Iran have a pact. So you're watching alliances form in real time. This is a direct threat to the U.S. Don't do it. The smartest thing right now Donald Trump could do is send a frigate up to the Straits of Hormuz, go, yep, see, they won't close it, they're afraid of us, and go home.
Really?
And end this idiocy.
You think this thing can be really big and not good for U.S.?
Absolutely. For Russia, Iran is the doorway to the Caucasus and Central Asia. For China, Iran is the doorway to Central Asia and further Eastern Asia. They're not going to let Iran fall. It's an existential crisis for both if Iran falls. Or shatters into small pieces.
And it's not just that. It's the weapons manufacturing, the missile deals they have. I mean, they're very much tied into Iran. So they're not going to be sitting on the sidelines. And, of course, they're announcing a surprise joint naval exercise in the Strait of Hormuz tomorrow as a sign to Donald Trump that maybe his bluffs aren't working. That may be what the message they're sending are. So we'll move on. We'll get into Jeffrey Epstein as we do have some breaking news and statements following the deposition of Leslie Wexner. So we'll get to that in just a second. Just finally, on the talk of war, I want to finish out with a very strange occurrence that happened during the negotiations around Ukraine. So right now there are, dueling diplomatic summits happening one in Geneva with Iran and one with Russia and Ukraine, also in Geneva. Yeah, so both of these, so there's like a big, there's a series of big diplomatic talks happening in Geneva right now. Second day of talks on Russia-Ukraine war ends after only 2 hours. The discussions in Geneva were expected to focus on territorial issues, a major sticking point, but the short duration suggests major progress was not made, although they then went into another closed-door negotiation between Russia and Ukraine directly. And the way Volodymyr Zelensky is talking about this, even though he's not at the talks, it's leading people to believe that against his will, they're going to come to some sort of agreement, because he's complaining about, he's like, oh, the Ukrainian people won't let me give up territory. And he's talking in a way that's different than he normally does. But the weird thing that happened, the bizarre occurrence here, is clip number 29. Apparently during this summit between Ukraine and Russia, with the America facilitating, obviously, a delegation of UK diplomats showed up uninvited and tried to gate crash the peace summit. Totally weird. Let's go to clip 29 here. She says, we saw that a serious delegation from Great Britain had arrived here inside this hotel, headed by the security advisor to the prime minister. They had checked into the hotel the day before, and this morning, the security advisor had already had breakfast with Steve Witkoff, and Dan Driscoll also joined them briefly. So apparently, like, without knowledge of the actual participants of the talks, a diplomatic entourage from Great Britain just showed up and wanted to insert themselves into the talks, which, if you remember, in 2022, there was a peace summit in Istanbul that basically both sides had agreed to. The Ukrainian delegates and the Russian delegates had both agreed to it in a handshake sort of deal. All that was left was the signatures from the heads of state, and in swooped the UK and Boris Johnson, and they convinced Zelensky to drop the whole thing and stopped that peace agreement from being signed. That was all the way back in 2022. Of course, if it had been signed then, not only would the Ukraine goals be actually more fulfilled. Like, ever since that peace, they've just lost more land, they've lost more leverage, they've lost hundreds of thousands of men, they've of course been robbed of hundreds of millions of dollars. There's been absolutely no positive development since then, and now they're just in a significantly worse place when they go to negotiate. So is the UK doing it again? Did the UK send a delegation, just like they did with Boris Johnson back in 2022, to try to disrupt and derail these peace talks so that we could finally get to that long-awaited World War III, where the European elite could finally finish the job of eradicating the European people? Very interesting development there. The gate crashing of a peace summit. It's just bizarre. Now, Epstein continues to be a major topic of conversation as more and more revelations are made. But the thing that happened today, yeah, I'll go, you know what? I'll go to those on the other side. Les Wexner has made a statement and was deposed by the House Committee Oversight Board, but not any of the Republicans for some reason. And they've made statements about his statement, and we'll look into all that. But I want to go now to clip number 3 here. This is Representative Ted Lieu lying about the Epstein files in a way that should really make you wonder what's actually going on. Let's go to clip number 3 here. This is Representative Ted Lieu saying lies about Donald Trump and the Epstein files. Let's watch.
So why are Republicans so interested in Bill and Hillary Clinton? It's because they're trying to distract from the fact that Donald Trump is in the Epstein files thousands and thousands of times. In those files, there's highly disturbing allegations of Donald Trump raping children, of Donald Trump threatening to kill children. So I encourage your press to go look at these allegations, and I'm highly disturbed that Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche just got the law wrong. Yesterday, he said essentially that it is not a crime to party with Jeffrey Epstein. Well, that's actually not correct. If Jeffrey Epstein was human trafficking minors for these sex parties, and you show up and patronize the establishment at that party, yes, you're guilty, because patronizing is part of the law, the federal sex trafficking law. So Deputy General Tavlin just got that wrong, which maybe explains why they aren't investigating
stretching so far. Like, I'm not defending human traffickers, but that's just not true. You can have a human trafficker at a party. Everybody at that party is not then guilty of human trafficking. Like, what are you talking about? And again, not even like to defend Trump or whatever. It's just, you should understand that if they had anything to pin on Trump, they wouldn't be saying, well, he went to a party with somebody that was guilty, so I guess he's guilty, right? It's like just the weakest stretch of the imagination. But of course, earlier on, he says, well, there's all of these very, you know, salacious, unproven allegations about Donald Trump, you know, killing kids, raping kids. It's just terrible. But yeah, they're allegations. Most of them are from after 2020. And it's funny, I said this, people are like, can you link me to where the, you know, claims about Donald Trump are disproven? And it's like, yeah, on the same documents they're made. On the same documents that have the allegations, they also say these allegations were made in 2020 by somebody who didn't have the ability to know what they were saying and completely is impossible to have happened because the place they say it happened didn't exist at the time they said it happened. Like, on the papers were all these very salacious claims about Donald Trump. It always has some sort of thing being like, yeah, and this was investigated and totally untrue. So he's just lying to you. Here's the interesting thing to me. Here's the real question. Why aren't they going after Trump's associates? Why are they so hyper-focused on trying to get Trump himself and only Trump himself? Because he's not in the files in the way that Ted Lieu is saying. He's just not. And if he is, it's these completely baseless, like utterly disproven allegations that aren't worth the paper they're printed on. So why isn't he saying, you know, Howard Lutnick is his secretary of commerce, you know, his commerce secretary. He is all over these and he lied about it. Donald Trump needs to fire Howard Lutnick or else he's complicit. Why aren't they saying that? Why aren't they going after his associates? It's because they don't actually care. And because they know that if they were to bring that up, Trump might actually realize what's going on. They don't want to give Trump an out. They want to play into the story that Trump himself seems to be believing. This is all about him and trying to get him. They're playing that game because they don't actually care about the victims. They don't actually care about the people involved. They don't even actually care about, you know, getting people who are on the Epstein list out of office or anything. They just want Trump. That's all they care about. And so they're just lying or just insinuating things that aren't true about Donald Trump, when they could be going after his associates, and I'd actually be in support of them doing that. But they won't, because they don't care.
We've got to get to a point where we are self-sufficient again, Texas. And when it comes to health, also food, our food needs to be clean, number one. It just needs to be clean. And
Florida has pointed out, put that back on screen, all these major brands have got, like, you know, hundreds of times the glyphosate you should have.
Glyphosate.
Absolutely. Well, your doctor tells us what that does.
Oh, this is going to change your brain. This is going to set you up.
It erases your blood-brain barrier.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really an accelerant or an adjuvant.
Absolutely.
Everything in there. Explain that.
It destroys the blood-brain barrier. So that's a protective thing that happens between the cerebral spinal fluid and your fluids inside the brain and the things that attack it from the outside. Once that barrier is depleted, then it's subject to all kinds of heavy metals, things that get sprayed from the sky, right? Barium, aluminum, all these things that it protects you from. When methylene blue works, it does. It counters that.
Let me ask you that. 45 minutes in, you feeling, Doc?
Yeah, I feel pretty good.
Be honest, though. You got your own special brand. Is this good or what?
This is the same effect I'm getting, but it feels right. Yeah, it feels right. Yeah, it's a little easier to take. Yeah.
By easier, what do you mean? Compared
just
to
the way it feels, you know, just going down, drinking it. But it's, yeah.
So this one tastes better, but it's as good as the one your doctor gave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, so your daughter must have a good one.
We'll see. We'll go down the road a little ways. I'll text you.
Guys, get him a couple bottles of this. I need Doc Chambers endorsing this.
I'm not getting it for free, but I'll definitely help.
No, you're getting it down. Come on. Free your blood. It's amazing.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue. At TheAlexShowStore.com.
Unlimited pilots.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the second hour of the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're talking a little bit more about domestic goings-on, including the fallout of the deposition of Les Wexner today. We've had some statements from the congressman who deposed him. And we're also going to play in the next segment a report from Alex Jones. He's got some inside details, inside baseball about what happened to Tucker Carlson in Israel, so stay tuned for that. But I want to go to a video here. I put it together today because there's been a series of videos that have gone viral of people in Virginia crashing out about their electricity bills and how their electricity bills have doubled or tripled since Alison Spanberger got elected. Abigail Spanberger got elected as governor. And I realized as I was watching these videos that it reminded me of the debate between Abigail Spanberger and her opponent, when the opponent was saying, you know, how can you do this? You know, don't you have any sympathy for the people who these policies will hurt? And remember, Spanberger just stared straight ahead and refused to even acknowledge. I mean, we played it a lot on this show just because it was so creepy. It was just this cold, dead-eyed stare where she was like trying not to laugh as Winsome Earl Sears was being like, you know, don't you care? Like, what is wrong with you? And it was so creepy and so weird. So I thought I'd put these two together. I thought this actually kind of makes a good sort of illustration. Here is the people under Abigail Spanberger suffering under her policies, not able to live and survive and afford their basic necessities under her deliberate, you know, price gouging of them. And she doesn't care. She doesn't give a damn. She's trying not to laugh at all of you for believing that she was a moderate Democrat in the first place. And if you'd listened to us the whole time, you wouldn't have fallen for it, would you? So here's an illustration of what's going on in Virginia right now. The regular people suffering under Abigail Spanberger's policies while Abigail Spanberger couldn't give less of a shit. Let's watch.
So can somebody please explain something to me? What the fuck is going on with energy in Virginia? Because something to me is just not making sense. Every single electric bill I'm getting is looking like this. This is how all my electric bills are looking. Something doesn't make sense, bro. And every time I call Dominion Energy, they tell me that I'm tripping.
I can't pay this. $741.98. It's due on February 17th. Normally, the highest bill I've usually ever gotten was anywhere from, you know, $3 to maybe $320. We can't keep going on like this. I mean, things are already high enough. Everything's high right now. And electricity, like I said, is something that we obviously need. And it's not like we have a choice. So what are we supposed to do when we can't even pay our electricity bill?
I just got my energy bill for the month. Dominion Energy out of Virginia. My bill has tripled. Like, I usually pay about $200, you know, on a regular, $300 on a high note. $621. That's more than my car payment. What the actual hell is going on? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You voted for the CIA spook who told you what she was going to do. You know, what do you expect? And we got to talk about this. Like, we got to make this a talking point because 100%, and it's confirmed now, and they're writing articles about how, you know, happy they are. Like, the Democrats are looking at Abigail Spanberger and going, that's the strategy right there. You act like a moderate. You just talk like a normal American. You just say really normal thing. You just go, hey, people should be able to afford their lives, man. You know, why not? And then you get elected, and then you govern like Chairman Mao. And you raise the prices on the very people you were saying you were going to help them. And they're realizing, okay, this is how we do it. We act like we're moderates, and then we rule like we're radicals. And then the media will cover it up and spin it for us. And the people will suffer, but what the hell are they going to do? We have 4 years to tear their lives apart, and then we'll ruin the voting system, so they're stuck with us. Yeah, we got to let people know this is the strategy, because people are going to keep falling for it. So tell people, send it around. Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. We're going to go to a special report from Alex Jones, giving you the inside baseball of what happened with Tucker Carlson being detained in Ben Gurion Airport after interviewing Mike Huckabee, ambassador to Israel. So we'll go to that in just a second. I do want to remind you that you have until midnight tonight to take advantage of the biggest sale we've ever offered at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you. 52% off site-wide, every single product on the store, over half off right now. That only goes till midnight. So if you've been hearing me say this for a few days and thinking, maybe I will, this is your clarion call. Do it. Now's the time. Don't wait. You're going to regret it if you don't take advantage of this 52% off sale. You're going to regret it, honestly. You're going to be like, well, maybe I should have gotten it during when I was 52. I still want it, but it's twice as much now. No, get it now. Get it now while you can, folks. You have until midnight tonight, whether you're stocking up because you love the products or just trying them for the first time. There is no better time than right now in the next few hours to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself some of the energy shots, get yourself some of the methylene blue, get yourself some of the CMOS, and you're entered to win both of the cars, the F-250 and the GT, the Shelby GT classic Ford muscle car. You are entered to win both of those with 100-time entries for every dollar you spend at thealexjonesstore.com. And with that, we now go to Alex Jones, and he breaks down what happened to Tucker Carlson when he tried to innocently visit our greatest ally, Israel. Let's watch.
All right. It has been reported, it's a big top story, that Israel detained Tucker Carlson trying to leave after his interview with Ambassador Mike Huckabee. So I thought, I'm not going to move the Daily Mail because they lie so much. I'm going to call Tucker Carlson's crew. He didn't answer. I talked to his crew earlier with that. And they said, yeah, after the Huckabee thing, reportedly it's going to be pretty spicy. They got him at the airport, grabbed him in his passport, interrogated him. And that's basically it. So the quote of the Daily Mail is real. That did happen. And I just want to say something. Like, here's the deal. Israel, you're the most unpopular country in the world right now, okay? You should be seen as the underdog. Everybody's turning against you. I'm not with the Islamists, but I'm also not with what you're doing. Tucker is beloved. You may live in your own echo chamber and, you know, demonize him because he isn't for war with Iran or whatever. But this was a major league stupid move. You all know who he is. They knew who he was. They pulled him out. They pulled his passport. And Tucker's not trying to make a big deal about it. Like, come on. Well, yeah, they did do it. But, you know, let's just move on. So Tucker's people, and Tucker doesn't want to make a big deal about this. Well, I can't help it. I'm going to make a big deal about it. Because I mean, Huckabee is a piece of work, man. The guy should not be the ambassador to Israel. It's okay if you're pro-Israel, be the ambassador. He is Israel, not first, Israel only. Like we say we're America only, he's Israel only. And it's whatever Netanyahu wants only. So I wonder what they got on him. And again, everybody knows I don't have some hard on for Israel. I don't think Israel is the root of all evil and has all, you know, I mean, I had a huge guest on, Kathy O'Brien, MK Ultra sex slave on, confirmed. And a caller calls and says, why aren't you covering Israel? We cover Les Wexner, the billionaire Israeli operative, saying he's demon-possessed and he's now the co-conspirator and all that. We cover all that. We don't have to, like, always make Israel part of it. You know, there's other stuff going on. But Israel continues with chutzpah to act like this, and it's really, really, really stupid. They're trying to pressure Trump to go to war. I was a few months ago in Maine with Tucker, but even before that, earlier last year, they were trying to go to war the first time, and he had Netanyahu and people calling up, you know, yelling at him. It's like, we're allowed to be anti-war. Tucker's apologized being pro-war before. He's anti-war now. I mean, I get why we kind of went into Venezuela. I said, I don't overall support it, but I get what Trump's doing. Tucker's not even at that point. So, what does Israel think this is going to do? But again, that's that disconnection that's living in your own little bubble. And that's what's wrong. So, I don't support Hamas to the mountains of the sea and all that stuff, but I also don't support the Israel lobby trying to ban the First Amendment to stop anti-Israel talk. The ADL and all the rest of it in Europe. So it's a big problem. Israel, please, your leadership, stop making yourselves the villain. What do you think detaining Tucker and bringing him in and interrogating him and getting in his face and taking his passport away? Do you think that scares people so they don't talk bad about you now? I mean, you're acting like five-year-olds. You know, they say that who the gods will destroy, they first make mad. And I don't want Israel destroyed. And all the idiots want to destroy it. They have nuclear weapons. It's not going to happen. But at the same time, if America's going to fall from within, if Israel's going to fall from within, if Europe's going to fall from within, any of these countries, and we are falling from within with psychotic, crazy, dumbass leaders, leave our journalists alone. To the EU trying to sue and criminally charge Elon Musk. It's crazy. But these tyrants, again, are in their own bubble. So, yes, Tucker did get grabbed. They did interrogate him. They did take his passport. They tried to basically intimidate him. I just like, oh, now Tucker's going to put his tail between his legs and kiss Netanyahu's ass and Ambassador Huckabee, Mr. Christian Zionist, and all of his just over the, I mean, if he worshipped America like that, it'd be a little weird. But, I mean, he just, not against Israel, but I don't worship Israel. And the state of Israel, it's not the biblical people of Israel. And all these fake quotes by Ted Cruz and stuff about if you don't worship Israel, you go to hell. It's just not true, folks. I love America. I don't worship our government. I don't like the communist Chinese government. I'm not against the Chinese people. I'm not against the Jews, but I don't like what the Israeli leadership's doing. I don't support the Rothschilds and Ehud Barak, who are running the operation trying to overthrow Netanyahu. Doesn't mean I support Netanyahu. If people want to vote him out, that's fine. But my point is I know the different factions here. And people need to learn the factions. Like the attempts to say Netanyahu is involved with Epstein, it's actually true when Netanyahu says I'm not. It's the whole leftist Rothschild arm that's doing it. And the Supreme Court. So I know the players here. So this is the dumbest move. I mean, maybe Netanyahu's not behind it. Maybe the opposition to Netanyahu did this, because this is a bad move, folks. You have idiots saying, oh, great, put Tucker in prison. He works for Qatar. No evidence of that. Or Tucker's great, blow up Israel. We don't know everything. Tucker's people don't know either. They just know overall the story's true. And the statement's true out of the Daily Mail. So that's it. Find me at Real Alex Jones on X, on Rumble, the Alex Jones Show, Infowars.com/show. Thank you all for everything out there. Just keep spreading the word. We had a powerful broadcast today with Les Wexner saying he's demon-possessed and serves demons to tell him what to do. Here's the name of the demon he is possessed by that runs him. Kind of a big deal. You might want to look at that. Epstein's email was called Ball, human sacrifice demon. I mean, I'm just reporting. And if the Chinese are doing that, I'll report on it.
or if Americans are, or Christians are, the Catholic Church is doing that stuff. Come on. We just cover the facts, folks, he calls balls and strikes. Thank you so much. I'll follow you next. We're all Jones, and God bless. But Tucker's safe.
All right, so make sure you are following us on X for those exclusive reports. And, Leslie Lunexer says himself that he is possessed by a demon. So take that for what it's worth. Not sure if that came up in the deposition today. We'll get into it because he was deposed today. Story from notus.org. Les Wexner deposed by House Oversight Committee over Epstein ties. Democratic members of the House Oversight Committee questioned former CEO Les Wexner on Wednesday morning at his home in Ohio as part of their investigation into affiliates of Jeffrey Epstein, the billionaire's former associate. The relationship between Epstein and Wexner, the founder of L Brands, the former owner of Victoria's Secret, has been under renewed scrutiny following the release of a 2019 FBI document that listed him as a co-conspirator in the investigation into the late convicted sex offender. Attorney General Pam Bondi said at a House Judiciary Committee hearing last week that Wexner's name appears more than 4,000 times in the Epstein files. Democratic members of the committee expressed frustration after the deposition, saying Wexner said he could not remember answers to many of their questions, including how Epstein obtained hundreds of millions of Wexner's money. In a very real way, Les Wexner gave Epstein credibility to commit some of the crimes he did, said Representative Stephen Lynch. There's no question in my mind, given the evidence so far, that Les Wexner knew about this and failed to stop it. So once again, inexpressible disappointment in the Republicans for letting the Democrats take the point on this. Why are they the ones talking about Les Wexner? Why are they the ones actually questioning him? According to the Democrats, the Republicans didn't even show up for this for some reason, for some truly inexplicable reason. Let's go to clip 44 here. Congressman talking about who showed up to question Les Wexner at his Ohio home.
It is very frustrating the fact that there are no Republicans here today. I wish there were Republicans because sex trafficking should not be a D versus R issue. It should be a bipartisan issue. Everybody should be invested in finding the truth right now. And the fact that we've had so little cooperation from the Republicans on the House Oversight Committee, that the DOJ has actively tried to obstruct this investigation, that is shameful, and it will go down as a permanent mark on the records of people like Pam Bondi and Donald Trump.
It is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And there's a lot of good people on the House Oversight Committee. Comer's on there. Anna Paulina Luna's on there. None of them showed up to question Les Wexner. So now the Democrats get to parade around like they're the only ones that care about the Epstein files, even though they're the ones that are all over it. And they spent 10 years trying to downplay the entire concept of elite pedophilia and called you a crazy QAnon conspiracy theorist if you talked about it. And now they're up there going, this falls on the laps of the Republicans for refusing to go to investigate this. And it does. Like, what are they doing? Why weren't they there? Again, just crazy. And I mean, if you're watching the Alex Jones show today and hearing the general talk about this, it's like, yeah, like what are they doing? This is, it really is beyond ridiculous. Let's go to clip 43 here. Representative Jasmine Crockett. She was there. She's making hay out of this. She's using this to progress her political career. Couldn't be bothered to show up. No Republicans could be bothered to show up to the Les Wexner questioning event. Now that I say it, I mean, I'm just like, it just hit me so hard right there. Obviously, they were instructed not to go. Sorry, it's so obvious. It just struck me. Of course, they didn't go. They were instructed not to by Trump. I guarantee you that's what it was. I don't have any evidence of that, but I thought about it for 10 seconds and I just realized, obviously, no Republicans went because the Republican leadership told them not to go. Right? That makes sense. Why would they not go? Why would they give up this political football that's so valuable? Absurd. So we'll let Jasmine Crockett tell us all about it. Clip number 43.
Is that there were always young girls seemingly looking for an opportunity to model, and there were always rich and powerful people on the other side, dangling a carrot, saying, I will give you the life that you're seeking. Yet ultimately, the stories are the same. They're stories of abuse. They're stories of trafficking at the highest level. And I will tell you one thing that was remembered for sure was when asked about Donald Trump and Epstein and whether or not they had been in the same room and what that looked like. He didn't quite remember, but he imagined that, yes, that possibly happened, because he did remember that Donald Trump also would like to show up to the Victoria's Secret runway shows. Now, that was a little odd to him, he said, because Donald Trump was not engaged in fashion whatsoever.
This is what I don't understand. How can anybody think that they have anything on? They never have anything on Trump. And it's weird because they, like, make that argument for us by trying desperately to say stuff about Trump. Like, if she had not said anything about Trump right there, you could have speculated or whatever. But no, she says they specifically asked about Donald Trump. And Les Wexner, obviously trying to give them what they want, trying to insinuate that Trump was somehow involved. The only thing he has was, yeah, Donald Trump sometimes showed up to the Victoria's Secret runway shows. You know, the big social events where all the rich and powerful from New York City go to be seen and to hang out. It was suspicious that he was there because he didn't have anything to do with fashion. Oh, yeah, other than owning the Miss America contest and, like, helping to run supermodel agencies. Like, what are you talking about? What are they talking about? So just once again, I don't know what other conclusion you could come to other than, once again, the co-conspirators of Epstein under oath completely clear Trump of any wrongdoing. And he didn't try to, he's, you know, Les Wexner's not, like, covering up for Trump. He's like, well, I did see him at the Victoria's Secret one runway shows, and that was weird. Why would that be weird? What is weird about that? You were having a runway show, right? You want celebrities to show up there? Like, what are you talking about? This is what I mean. And even now, I've got people just being like, why are you covering for Trump? Because I don't think there's anything there. If there is, I'll report on it. But what are you talking about? Yeah, they went to a Victoria's Secret fashion event along with, like, hundreds of other people. So, like, if there was anything, I would let you know. Every time Donald Trump is brought up and investigated with any sincerity, he's cleared. Les Wexner clears him again. Jamie Crockett, maybe too dumb to know what she's saying, clears him thoroughly. Well, we did ask, and he said that he showed up to the Victoria's Secret. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you really have nothing. You're going with whatever you have, and it's nothing. And if you had anything else, you would have gone with that. So they talked more about it. And again, you know, I guess there's a thin line, like when you're talking about modeling agencies or any sort of acting agency or anything like that. Like, when you describe just their normal business practices, it can sound creepy, like Jasmine Crockett just made it there. Where it's like, you have, you know, this endless supply of young women that are wanting to get noticed and these old men that are there, you know, able to give them careers. It's like, well, yeah, that is how it works. No, yeah, that's definitely how it works. Yeah, models tend to be pretty young women and they want jobs and the companies are owned by old Jewish guys and they give them the jobs, and that is how it works, actually. It's not necessarily suspicious, but it does obviously, you know, provide fertile ground for creeps that want to do bad things. But just to say that there were models around a modeling agency isn't exactly the bombshell that I think they expected it to be treated as. Let's go to clip 41 here. Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator, Les Wexner, did admit to members of Congress, quite a few things, including traveling with Epstein. Let's go to clip 41 here.
They spent a lot of time together. Mr. Wexner admitted that he traveled to both Epstein's island as well as his other properties. Mr. Wexner also admitted that Jeffrey Epstein had access to a lot of Mr. Wexler's wealth. And when asked even simple questions, even as it relates to Mr. Epstein being the co-president of the foundation that established the area that we're in today, Mr. Wexler had little to say. In fact, it's clear that Mr. Wexler is trying to downplay how close Jeffrey Epstein and Mr. Wexler actually were. And we should be very clear that there would be no Epstein Island, there'd be no Epstein plane, there'd be no money to traffic women and girls. Mr. Epstein would not be the wealthy man he was without the support of Les Wexler.
Good for the Democrats, man. It pains me to say it. But that's great. That's exactly what we need to know. It's exactly what we need to hear. I hope they don't, you know, give up on this. I hope they continue to chase this, path, because everything you said right there is the very powerful information. There would be no island. There would be no Jeffrey Epstein as we know him without Leslie Wexner's money. And Leslie Wexner just saying he doesn't remember how Jeffrey Epstein got all of his money is not believable in the slightest. It's obviously untrue. And Leslie Wexner is obviously deeply involved in all of this. And it's just a damn shame that it's a gaggle of Democrats that are the ones delivering this, because not a single Republican from the entire oversight committee decided to go. And again, just out of pure speculation, but it makes sense to me. I think they were told not to. Because the powers that be are trying to destroy the Republican Party. I think everybody needs to understand that the powers that be are trying to destroy the Republican Party. You understand this? They're trying to basically expel all the most popular people from the Republican Party, to where it'll be nobody but Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin and Howard Lutnick, who was a Democrat until last year, still is a Democrat. In 2024, do you know Howard Lutnick gave like $150,000 to the Clinton Global Initiative? Goes on and on. But yeah, they're destroying the Republican Party. And they're using Epstein to do it. And the Republicans are playing along. Billionaire Les Wexner says he was duped by advisor Jeffrey Epstein, a world-class con man. Oh, sure. No, I'm sure Les, the billionaire behind the retail empire that once blanketed shopping malls with names such as Victoria's Secret and Abercrombie and Fitch, told members of Congress on Wednesday that he was duped by a world-class con man, close financial advisor Jeffrey Epstein. Les Wexner also denied knowing about the late sex offender's crimes or participating in Epstein's abuse of girls and young women, saying, quote, I was naive, a foolish and gullible to put any trust in Jeffrey Epstein. He was a con man. And while I was conned, I have done nothing wrong and have nothing to hide, said the 88-year-old vessel of a demon, according to his own account. It's just pathetic. Just everything about this is pathetic. It's pathetic this guy's gone on this long without being confronted with this stuff. It's pathetic. It's only the Democrats that are going after him now. It's pathetic that he can just lie with impunity like that when he should ostensibly be under oath and not allowed to lie like this. Just all of this is absurd. This is a gigantic circus. And all I can say now is, hey, if the Democrats are going to actually get justice for this, then great. I guess I'm going to start supporting them. And so we'll get into on the other side the way that apparently Susie Wiles and the whole White House is holding emergency meetings to try to figure out what to do during the midterms, while simultaneously not a single Republican is going to investigate Les Wexner, as that continues to be the top story in the entire country. Yeah, they're trying to destroy the Republican Party. You think they don't know how bad this looks? You think they don't know what they're doing? They're doing it on purpose. Donald Trump's made a new statement, still threatening Iran. Gee, they're wondering why they're so unpopular.
Now,
Now, this is an emergency flash sale. It funds our operation, and these are incredible products. This is the biggest sale of the year right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Store-wide, all the supplements, all the apparel, the ball caps, the T-shirts, all of it, the hoodies, the sweaters, the incredible supplements, ultramethylene blue, our proprietary ultramethylene red, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, all of it until tomorrow at midnight. We extended it one day, store-wide, 52% off. So I'm saying this live on air on February 17th, Tuesday. Tomorrow, February 18th at midnight Central Time, the sale will end. Store-wide, 52% off. Ends tomorrow night at midnight. This is an alert. Your support keeps us on air, and I thank you so much. I want to give back to you. For those on the fence, I want you to experience ultramethylene blue, ultramethylene red, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, our bovine colostrum. It's a private label, the top brand in the country, 2,000 milligrams per little scoop. So good for your skin, your hair, your eyes, your whole body. It's the first 2 weeks of milk that comes off a cow or any other mammal. Is incredible. And this is the final week. This only happens every few months. Where you don't just, every time you make a purchase, get put in one time in the raffle for whatever cool American-made supercar they're having, off-road, Mustangs, you name it. You get put in 100X into the raffle, which they've never done before, in this week. And you get put in to win both vehicles, both the F-250 diesel and the Ford Mustang Shelby. That is a huge deal, and $20,000 cash. So take advantage of that right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And listen, I don't own TheAlexJonesStore.com. Bigley does, with all their great operations they do. So if they're able to shut down InfoWars, you can read about the news, they're still trying. It doesn't matter because Bigley owns that, and they're our sponsor, and they've built the Alex Jones Network backup studios and are helping build the new studios. I'm just work for them in the future. I don't yet. And so they can't stop me. They'll be the owner. I'll be the news director. So you're not just funding the current operation, they're funding InfoWars as well, like 90% of the funding. They're also funding the future. So go to TheAlexJonesStore.com now and take advantage of the biggest sale of the year, 52% off store-wide, and everybody buying anything should commit in the lightest, easiest way. Become a VIP for $30 a month with one click. You instantly get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, discount sales on top of other sales on top of everything. If you're going to buy anything, you should be a VIP. The reason I say it's a very light commitment, you can cancel any time for free with one click. Just for whatever day of the month you sign up as a VIP, it rolls around every month and charges you $30. You don't like it for whatever reason, you get your $40, you spend it, you get your discounts, all that, then don't have any money at the time, whatever, you just cancel. So if you're going to buy anything, you should be a VIP because you get $40 instantly to spend in the store. You make $10 and it lowers the cost of everything you just bought on top of the sale. If you're a VIP, at 50% off, some of these products are loss leaders, meaning we're losing money. But because we have a, I didn't understand this, we have a repeat sale on the store of 98%. No one has that. On the supplements, over 80% reorder individually. That's how good these are. So take advantage now. You have less than 48 hours. So tomorrow night at midnight. You have until tomorrow night at midnight. So go to TheAlexJonesStore.com now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I would bring the case yesterday that he trafficked to other individuals. And the information we have, again, is limited.
So the answer is no one?
For the information that we have.
I always wonder how dumb this goyim sometimes can be. And they say, you killed our God.
They are legitimately
proactively protecting pedophiles.
They are protecting pedophiles at this point.
By redacting the abusers' names. The White House, listen up, everybody, the White House is protecting pedophiles. You hear that? They're protecting pedophiles.
Enough. You aren't mad enough. Get louder. Yeah. I mean, that gives you a little bit of an idea of what we're dealing with here. And then the Donald Trump administration wonders why the polls aren't looking so hot for them. It's just sad. It's honestly just sad. See everything go down like this. Epstein files show years of FBI interest in Les Wexner, Epstein's mysterious benefactor. Republican lawmaker leveled a stunning allegation last week. Not only had the government documents named a billionaire retail magnate as co-conspirator in Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking case, the Department of Justice had tried to shield the man from accountability. Representative Thomas Massie chastised the DOJ in a House hearing for redacting various names and details, saying this cover-up spans decades. A CNN review of the DOJ's massive Epstein file release found that while Wexner's name was initially redacted as the co-conspirator document, his name appears in hundreds of other records that show federal authorities have closely scrutinized Wexner and repeatedly sought information from him. That scrutiny has included questions from investigators before Epstein pled guilty to soliciting prostitution, including from a minor in 2008, and again when authorities pursued a new sex trafficking case against Epstein a decade later. Emails show authorities wanted to understand whether Wexner had knowledge of Epstein paying girls for sex acts, and officials subpoenaed Wexner in 2019 and spoke to his attorneys. Another 2019 FBI document lists Wexner as a secondary co-conspirator, but notes there is limited evidence regarding his involvement. But no, they've known about Les Wexner for years, because we've known about Les Wexner for years. Once again, InfoWars, Tomorrow's News Today. Like, one of the valuable things about us being here is that you can go back in the archives and see that we were talking about Les Wexner in like 2019, way beyond that. And by the way, do y'all remember, it was like a big scandal, I think when I was in high school, that Abercrombie & Fitch, which was owned by Les Wexner, was giving out, like, they would have catalogs with their products, but they were like softcore pornography, and they would have articles in it written telling kids how to like have sex and keep it from your parents. Y'all remember this? It was like a big scandal. I'm pretty sure I was like in middle school or high school, and it was a big deal, but just struck me as you read some of Leslie Wexner's holdings from his L company. You remember, like, oh yeah, Abercrombie and Fitch literally got in trouble for like trying to encourage children to have sex with each other in like the early 2000s. And just making it a culture of, sexual exploitation. Like, that's the thing. Yeah, these guys did brutal things and horrible things to, you know, their victims. But what is the impact they've had on the wider society? What is the impact of people like this / the demons that live in their ears? Like, what effect have they had being CEOs of the most prominent and prolific fashion outlets and restaurants and everything else? Like, is it any wonder that American culture is trash now because our most prominent cultural output is controlled by a bunch of literal pedophile demon vampires? I don't know if you just heard me. I said literal pedophile demon vampires. Do you think I'm joking? Does that just sound like it's, man, it sounds like an expression I'm using. No, I'm describing people who drink blood are sexually attracted to children and say they have a demon living in their head. Abercrombie magazine scandal reports the broader, deeply troubled, and highly sexualized culture created by former CEO Mike Jeffries, which ultimately culminated in a 2024 federal indictment for sex trafficking. Okay, there's more than I even knew about. Ex-Abercrombie boss now facing abuse claims from 40 men. That's right. That's right. I forgot about that. It's worse than I remember. No, I was talking about a scandal from like 15 years before that. But, okay, the CEO of Abercrombie was accused of sex trafficking 40 people. But Les Wexner, he's just an innocent old man. He's just an innocent old fool. Just a naive billionaire, you know? Just one of those naive, self-made billionaires. Doesn't know his ass from a hand grenade. Abercrombie's kids store sold bathing suits that were too sexy for some people. Not quite. Keep looking. You'll find it. 2003. Go to 2003, 2012. Because it wasn't just, it was like sexualized photos, but there was like descriptions. In 2003, Abercrombie and Fitch, controversy over its quarterly publication, which was often referred to as a magalog, a mixture of magazine and catalog. The scandal involved the publication of highly sexualized content, which featured scantily clad or nude models along suggestive articles, including one in 2003 Christmas edition about group sex. And it was aimed at children. 2003, look at that. Memory like a steel trap. Yeah, so as late as October 2023, people at Abercrombie & Fitch were like, you know what'll sell jeans? If we tell children to engage in group sex acts, I think that'll help us to sell jeans. You know what'll really get those jeans flying off the shelves? If we provide detailed instructions of children on how to get away with sexual activity without their parents knowing. You gotta wonder what effect the Jeffrey Epstein class has had. 1998 back to school issue featured alcoholic drink recipes and instructions for a drinking game. The Center for Science and the Public Interest also protested drinking 101 promotion, which advised rather than the standard beer binge, indulge in some creative drinking this semester. The article included recipes for 10 mixed drinks and a spinner featuring pictures of each drink intended for use in various drinking games. Again, in a magazine for children, for like high schoolers. In 2001, cultural conservatives and anti-porn feminists called for a boycott of ANF. Over the summer of 2001, issue of AF Quarterly, which showed photographs of naked or near-naked young people frolicking on the beach. The images also include top-naked young women and rear-naked young men on top of each other. The exploitation of sex and young people in ANF's catalog is not only atrocious, but also a psychological molestation of their teenage customers. That was from the Concerned Christians of America. The National Organization for Women criticized the catalog for unrealistic body types. The catalog included an interview with porn star Ron Jeremy, who discussed performing oral sex on himself using... Okay. Yeah, for teenagers. Can we arrest Lex Westerner for that, please? All right, so that just came to my mind when I realized that he owned that outlet as well. You gotta wonder. He says he was conned by the con man and nobody should believe him. Some other fallout from this from Zero Hedge. WEF rocked as CEO faces investigation over ties to, quote, Davos concierge Jeffrey Epstein. The World Economic Forum quietly launched an independent review earlier this month into its CEO, Borge Brindy, over his past interactions with Jeffrey Epstein. Files released by the DOJ show and exchanged various text images. One dinner occurred in September 2018, more than a decade after Epstein's 2008 conviction and guilty plea in Florida. Like many powerful figures, Brind has claimed he was unaware of Epstein's criminal history at the time of their meetings and is said to have ordered the probe into his communications with Epstein. And of course, it just goes hand in hand with the fact that Davos is famous for being replete with whores every time Davos goes and meets there. Remember in like 22, 23, it was a very big story where it was first sort of uncovered that I was like, yeah, every whore in Europe goes to Davos during the Davos meeting because it's a giant orgy of a bunch of creepy old men. The Israeli government, meanwhile, installed and maintained a security system at Epstein's apartment. the Israeli government installed security equipment and controlled access to a Manhattan apartment building managed by convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. According to a new set of emails released by the Department of Justice, the equipment was installed starting in early 2016 at 301 East 66th Street, the residence where former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak frequently stayed for stretches at a time. The security operation at, quote, Ehud's apartment was in place for at least 2 years, email from the DOJ disclosure show, with officials from the Israeli permanent mission to the United Nations corresponding regularly with Epstein's staff regarding security. The apartment was technically owned by a company connected to Epstein's brother, Mark Epstein, but was effectively controlled by Epstein. Units in the building were frequently loaned out to Epstein's contacts and used to house underage models. Rafi Shlomo, then director of protective service at the Israeli mission to the United Nations in New York and head of Barak security, corresponded with Epstein employees to arrange meetings to discuss security and coordinate installation of specialized security equipment at the 66th Street residence. Shlomo personally controlled access to the apartments for guests and even conducted background checks on cleaners and Epstein's employees. Under Israeli law, former prime ministers and other high-ranking officials typically receive security services after they leave office. According to the emails, Epstein personally approved the installation of the equipment, authorized meetings between his staff and Israeli security officials. Ehud Barak and the Israeli mission to the United Nations did not respond to requests for comment. Okay, so here we have evidence of Epstein working directly hand-in-hand with the government of Israel in order to install and manage their security in one of his, well, they were managing security in one of his buildings. So that's interesting. Prime Minister Netanyahu recently suggested that Epstein's close ties to Barak, a longtime Labor Party official and rival of Netanyahu, undermine rather than strengthen the case for Epstein's ties to Israel, saying Jeffrey Epstein's unusually close relationship with Ehud Barak doesn't suggest Epstein worked for Israel. It proves the opposite, Netanyahu said. Stuck on his election loss from over 2 decades ago, Barak has for years obsessively attempted to undermine Israeli democracy by working with the anti-Zionist radical left in failed attempts to overthrow the elected Israeli government. A January 2016 email exchange between Barak's wife and an Epstein employee, whose name is partially redacted, but appears from other communications to be his longtime assistant, Leslie Groff, discussed installing alarms and surveillance equipment at the residence, including 6 sensors stuck to the windows and the ability to remotely control access to the premises. Prelli informed Epstein staff that, quote, they can neutralize the system from far before you need somebody to enter the apartment. The only thing is to call Rafi from the consulate and let him know who and when is entering. Okay. So not only was he working with Israel, apparently an Israeli government employee who's the head of the Israeli UN, you know, diplomatic office, had direct access to who got in to Epstein's house. So not only does that prove a very close working relationship with the actual government of Israel, not just Israeli figures, but it also hints that whatever surveillance was done for blackmail purposes or just incidentally, as a consequence of security, you just happen to capture things, whatever it is, that security, those security tapes, were managed by Israel and are in Israel's hands. So what this represents is basically official acknowledgement that the apartments that Jeffrey Epstein used to house Ehud Barak and his other guests, as well as underage girls that they were raping, was done basically in partnership with the Israeli government on American soil. So I think that's extremely interesting and disturbing. And it goes on and on. It's just obvious that they were very much hand in glove throughout all of this. Just insane. And by the way, I keep seeing people, you know, repeat this claim that they're like, well, they've only released 3.5 out of 6 million documents. Folks, we probably haven't seen a quarter of a percentage of what's been captured from Jeffrey Epstein. And I'm just talking about what the FBI acknowledged that they captured for Epstein. I'm not even including whatever data bank in Tel Aviv was receiving the transmissions from Epstein's apartment. Don't forget that in just one FBI raid, and according to the FBI's own notes, they seized 30 computers, 8.3 plus terabytes of storage devices, a book labeled Girls Picks Nude Book 4, an 8.3 terabytes with 2009 quality records could hold 2.9 million pictures or 4,000 plus hours of video. Suggesting there is no evidence or no blackmail material is clearly a lie. Not to mention girls pick nude book number 4 when 1 through 3 were never found, and other catalogs were referencing women, not girls. So according to the FBI's own documents, in one raid, they received 8-plus terabytes full of information. So far, everything that's been released, I'm fairly sure, doesn't even arise to a terabyte. I think it's like less than 300 gigabytes, if I'm not mistaken. So we're talking about a percentage of a percentage of what we know that they have from one raid, let alone all of the surveillance that I'm sure they did. I'm sure they were capturing his phone calls during the investigation. I mean, we haven't gotten anything compared to what is still out there. The UN, however, says that based on what we have received already, allegations in the Epstein files may amount to crimes against humanity. And it really just goes on and on. But we got to move on, though, because it never ends. Although, one thing that we probably should be spending more time on is this from Tony Saruga on Substack. Epstein files, the 1999 to 2001 canyon. And essentially, people have sort of graphed out the documents over time. And there is a chronological void basically around 1999 to 2001. So here's the image. 1999-2001, the planning window leading up to 9/11 and the immediate aftermath. Remember, in these documents, we learned that there was a shadow 9/11 commission and that Ghislaine Maxwell was asked to be on it. So, I think that's worth noting and possibly investigating to a further degree, to a greater degree. But we got to move on. Although we're not really moving on, because this is all part of the same topic, and that is the utter failure of the Trump administration to make good on their promises or to make a good argument for why they should be voted for in the 2026 midterms. And apparently they're holding summits about this when you have to be deliberately obtuse not to understand exactly why the polls are not looking good for Donald Trump. It's not even really a question. But in case you were wondering, I have the answers for you. In case you were wondering why people are upset with President Trump, I suggest we go to clip 40 here. This is President Trump ally Mike Davis, who, by the way, just forced out one of the last good people in the Trump administration, Gail Slater. Here's him showing us why Trump deserves to lose in 2026. Let's watch.
I think the Attorney General Pam Bondi is doing a phenomenal job. She's bold. She's fearless. She fires people. She hires the right people. She brings charges. She dismisses bogus, politicized charges. She has bigger balls than all the Republican white male attorneys general before her combined. And people are constantly attacking her. And it seems to align with this Epstein, Massey, weirdo crowd that they're constantly attacking her on this stuff. And it's distracting and it's diverting resources from the cases that actually matter. If Thomas Massey actually cared about Epstein and these victims, where the hell was he for 4 years of Biden? This is obviously a political game by him. He's teaming up with Democrats on this political game. All these Epstein freaks keep attacking Pam Bondi, who's doing a remarkable job given the terrible circumstances, and they want to make her job more difficult by diverting prosecutors and law enforcement agents to do this stupid Epstein review instead of actually going after crimes they can prosecute.
I mean, is it any wonder? Is it any wonder why Trump is losing when these are the spokespeople out there basically calling his entire base idiots for wanting justice for what is now indisputably proven to be a gigantic criminal network doing things way worse than sleeping with underage girls, including potentially eating people, but definitely engaged in insider trading and God only knows how many other crimes revealed. And he just comes out and is just like, no, you're a weirdo. And Pam Bondi is amazing and she's doing awesome and she's getting so many convictions. Where are they? What are you talking about? I bet they feel foolish not choosing a Jewish person now. You could have said this was all about anti-Semitism. Isn't that what it sounds like? Isn't that the feeling you get? When it's just like, no, you don't have to speculate. You don't have to wonder. You don't have to, claim there's some sort of ulterior motive. We want the Epstein files released and she's not releasing them. We want the Russiagate conspirators arrested. She's not arresting them. We want the 2020 election adjudicated. She's not doing anything about that. And there's like, wow, they must be actually Democrats. Oh, okay. Keep telling yourself that, I guess. Like, we'll see. We'll see how that does for you. And again, they're apparently holding meetings about this. They're very confused. They don't understand why they're not more popular. And it's just like, I don't know what to tell you other than you're an idiot. You're like, you're all idiots. Let's go to clip number 28. Here's Peter Ducey talking about this all hands on deck emergency meeting. Figure out what to do about the failure to do anything. Let's watch.
Yes, I just got a text from a senior White House official who is confirming a story that just crossed in Axios. Susie Wiles, the White House chief of staff, James Blair, one of her top lieutenants, and a bunch of chiefs of staff, as well as some cabinet-level secretaries, are meeting right now on Capitol Hill in private, or I should say near Capitol Hill in private, to try to figure out President Trump's messaging strategy, how to sell his accomplishments and what he plans to do to help their chances in the midterms. Of course, next week, the State of the Union will be the chance to do that in prime time. Brett.
You'll see it right here. Peter Ducey live in the North Wall.
I think we have a good connection here. See, all of the people that should have been fired are now meeting to discuss the messaging. See, all the people that Trump didn't fire that are failing to uphold his campaign promises, that are undermining him at every pass, they never got fired. So now they're meeting to determine how to, best sell Trump's accomplishments despite the fact that they are the reason that Trump has not accomplished anything to try to sell us. So I think we've hit the nail on the head. I think we've figured out the problem. The problem Susie Wiles is trying to figure out is, in fact, Susie Wiles herself. So I don't think she's going to come to that conclusion. I have the feeling that that's not going to be the outcome of their little powwow. Here's a list of grievances from the main wonk. Former Trump supporter Ian Smith posted this list of grievances to social media. Promised Doge refund checks. What we got, memes, engagement bait, zero deposits. We got promised full transparency of the Epstein files, JFK files, the truth, in a word. What we got was redactions, delays, ongoing review, and basically being called idiots for expecting that promise to be upheld. He promised to drain the swamp. The swamp got better branding. He promised sub 10% APR credit cards. We got 29.99% variable in a lecture about market conditions. He promised no new wars. We got strategic support, defensive aid, and other foreign funding packages, and a war on Venezuela, and the Ukraine war still going on, and we're about to go to war with Iran. He promised America first, but instead billions got exported while your grocery bill stays domestic. He promised to abolish the 3-letter agencies. Instead, they got expanded budgets and better software. He promised the end of the Department of Education. We got more bureaucracy, different logo. I think the reason that you're having trouble selling your accomplishments is because you have none.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. bodybuilders take is it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win, but regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to go to an interesting video here. We still have a lot of news to get to in this third hour. I'm going to be joined by Jason Jones here in just a second. We're going to be talking about Israel taking over the West Bank and flagrant disregard of international law and decency and the demands of President Trump. So I'm very excited to talk to him, but I want to go to this video because this is amazing. This is clip 47. This is a former Lewiston City Councilman, Tim Gallant. And basically Lewiston was, the city council was debating a bill that basically they were going to disavow ICE and not cooperate with any ICE enforcement. And this former city councilman basically just shattered their entire paradigm. However, they still voted to not cooperate with ICE despite this. Let's go to clip 47. This is Lewiston former city councilman Tim Gallant.
Tim Gallant, Ward 7, prior councilman here for this fine city. I'm here against this ordinance. I just can't believe we wasted this much city money. We're crying about a budget, paying a lawyer to look at things we don't need. That is just beyond my comprehension of stupidity. My biggest problem with all this is you're trying to support 10% of the city by the census in 2025. What about the other 90%? What are you doing for them? What have you done for them? 5% tax increase? And then we had our mayor, and I'll quote, ICE operations in Maine have failed to improve public safety. How many gunshot issues have we had since ICE came to town? How about zero? Look at the police blotter. Zero. When's the last time we had 3 or 4 months of zero problems? But that don't count. That's not a crime problem, obviously, to the mayor. So I think we need to smarten up and think about this. You don't need this ordinance. There's one coming. You need to think about public safety and how we take care of it. You need to think about how to get ICE back in here, because if we didn't have people who are illegal, they wouldn't be here. You know, I keep hearing they're hiding in their houses. If you're not illegal, why do you hide in your house? Or you have a legal friend or a partner or somebody else involved in the system. The kids are hyped up in school for the simple reasons our teachers hype them up. Just like in Bangor when they did a march against ICE and had really ugly signs all organized by teachers, not kids, during school hours. What is wrong with people? They're out there trying to help and save us. Do they make mistakes? Sure. Raise your hand up there who's never made a mistake. I didn't see no hands. So yeah, there's going to be problems, and we'll let the legal system take care of it, but not at the city level. We have enough problems right now to try to take care of on our own. So stop wasting your time and money and our time on an ordinance that means nothing to 70, 80, 90% of our community. It means nothing to them. It gives them nothing. No value. No value added. That's not true. Because when ICE is here, the value added is it's safe to come downtown. It's safe to walk around some of these communities we've missed.
That's time. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so there he is talking about the fact that they have had zero shootings in Lewiston, Maine in the last 4 months from exactly the time that ICE arrived. And if we go to this map, you can see the map of shootings pre and post ICE. So here's 2019, where you have dozens of shootings. And here's 2025 after the ICE surge. Okay, so every one of these red dots is a shooting that occurred in 2019. These are the ones that occurred in 2020. And that's entirely because I showed up and cleared the criminals out. How insane is that? And guys, open up the retweet there. The main former Lewiston City Councilman, Tim Gallant. Yeah, because I want to see. Yeah, it's still passed. After a lengthy public comment, the proposal passed 5-2. It really doesn't matter to them. It really doesn't matter. You can literally show them the report and go, hey, before ICE was here, there were dozens of shootings. After they came, there were zero. And it doesn't matter to them. It really doesn't. They'd rather you get shot than have to admit that they're wrong. Sorry.
Now, this is an emergency flash sale. It funds our operation, and these are incredible products. This is the biggest sale of the year right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Store-wide, all the supplements, all the apparel, the ball caps, the T-shirts, all of it, the hoodies, the sweaters, the incredible supplements, ultramethylene blue, our proprietary ultramethylene red, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, all of it until tomorrow at midnight. We extended it one day, store-wide, 52% off. So I'm saying this live on air on February 17th, Tuesday. Tomorrow, February 18th at midnight Central Time, the sale will end. Store-wide, 52% off. Ends tomorrow night at midnight. This is an alert. So go to thealexjonesstore.com now.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be joined now by Jason Jones. You can follow him on X at Jason Jones VPP, and that stands for Vulnerable People Project, and you can find them at vulnerablepeopleproject.com. He, of course, is the host of the Jason Jones Show podcast, and is very concerned about what's happening in the more vulnerable populations in and around Israel. Jason, welcome to the show, sir.
Harrison, thanks for having me on. It's good seeing you.
Very good seeing you too. I wish it was, better news that we could be covering, but, tell us about what the Vulnerable People Project is doing and what their major concerns are these days.
Yeah. Well, you know, since the outbreak of war in Gaza, the Vulnerable People Project, we've been very active inside Gaza, providing, hot meals, firewood in the winter, shelter for the small and embattled Christian community, and also for the orphan communities there as well. And we've been working in the West Bank. I, in fact, was just there. I've been there four times this year. I was just there for Christmas. And we decided we were going to launch this Save West Bank Christians campaign on Ash Wednesday. And as you can tell, I'm Catholic. I didn't bump my head. I'm not a mechanic. It's Ash Wednesday. And but sadly, Israel decided that today would be the day. Well, this week, they announced that they're going to drop 11,000 houses in the Christian communities in the West Bank. Smutrich, the finance minister, just said yesterday that their ultimate goal is the ethnic cleansing of Christians, that Beth-Sahur is not their only goal, but that their ultimate objective is to remove the Christians from Bethlehem. And this is a reality. We're seeing the descendants of the Jews that accepted Jesus, the oldest Christian community in the world. These Christians descend from those who walked with and among the apostles. Their families were in the upper room. And we're about to witness the cleansing of the oldest Christian community in the world from the birthplace of Christianity, Bethlehem. And what makes this tragic is that, you know, American Christians, especially evangelical Christians, we're looking at maybe four, five, six, seven decades of propaganda that not only are Christians sitting on their hands in the United States, but there are some quote unquote Christian communities, because I think Christian Zionism is apostasy. It's a denial that Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of all the promises to Abraham. But there are these ecclesial communities, we can call them, that are cheering on the destruction, the murder. Yesterday they slaughtered hundreds of sheep that belonged to Palestinian Christians. 2 weeks ago, a Palestinian farmer, an elderly man, was shot in the head. So these are the kind of abuses that Christians are suffering in the West Bank. And if there's not silence coming from the West, there's actually a chorus advocating for it. And when someone courageous like Carrie Prejean Bowler, who was in the Religious Freedom Commission, speaks up in defense of the Palestinians, they immediately move and seek to destroy her.
Yeah. Yeah. And they succeed in it. It was just very troubling. And you've been sounding the alarm on this, and obviously it's increased quite a bit, the aggressiveness of the Israelis. From Vulnerable People Project, you say, Bethlehem is still home to a living Christian community, but it's under threat. Visit Save West Bank Christian site below to get the latest update. So if people want to know more about this, then go to SaveWestBankChristians.com. And I really encourage you to follow Vulnerable People Project at vulnerable_VPP on X. You can join the Vulnerable People Project by protecting the Holy Land's ancient Christian community. And I want to get more into that, but just some of the headlines from today. Jordan is next. West Bank annexation signals silence transfer. The occupied West Bank, that's from Al Jazeera. As Israel takes steps to claim land in West Bank, U.S. stands by. Despite President Trump's opposition to annexation, Israel has taken steps to expand control over the West Bank, and experts say may lead to seizure of the territory. Yes, obviously, that's the point. Top Israeli minister pushes for immigration of West Bank Gaza Palestinians. This is Beziel Smotrich, who says, we will eliminate the idea of an Arab terror state, and is encouraging them to immigrate, a.k.a. ethnic cleansing. Holy Land Patriarch decries Israel's devastation of Gaza, rising settler attacks in the West Bank. This is from LifeSite News. So these are all from just the last few days. This article is from a week ago, but obviously it hasn't slowed down at all. Do you have any idea why Trump is letting this happen? Because I played over and over again. He was asked about the West Bank about 2 months ago, and he said in no uncertain terms, not happening. They're not annexing it. There's too much aggression in the West Bank. I don't like it. That's not going to happen. Well, it's happening, and nobody from the U.S. seems interested in even talking about it, let alone trying to stop it. Why are they being allowed to do this? And you know, what can we do to stop it?
Well, Harrison, you posted something on X that was chilling. I think it was today. It's today when I saw it, that Israelis were caught placing tracking devices, did I see this right, on yes. the president's emergency response vehicles, as if they want to know where the president's being taken after he was shot. Or they want to send them flowers, I think, as you suggested. Or someone sent that to me and said, I think they want to know where to send flowers. I don't know if you said that or someone posted that in response to your post. I think there's fear. When you have Ambassador Mike Huckabee that needs to be recalled, he is not the ambassador of the United States to Israel. He is Israel's agent working from the embassy in Israel. This is a man who went to Gaza, saw famine. I know people that were with him. When he witnessed famine, he came back and held a press conference and denied the famine. This is a man that met with one of the greatest traitors in American history. He tried to meet with him clandestinely in the embassy. Now we know, I call Israel, I'm from Hawaii. We call the United States the mainland, and Hawaii is an island. So I call, you know, Israel now is, to me, Epstein mainland. So we now know the state of Israel was abusing American girls in the worst possible way in the attempts to blackmail, bribe, and control American politicians. You have Mike Huckabee behaving as if someone who is completely controlled. Mike Johnson went to the West Bank, met with the settlers that were attacking Christians, and gave them a pep talk. How in the world does a Christian go to the birthplace of Christianity and cheer terrorists on, and that's what I think these settlers are. We call them settlers. That's a nice way of saying ethno-nationalist terrorists, because they are racist. They are ethno-nationalists. And this is hard for so many Christians to understand because of decades of propaganda. They hate you. They hate you. They hate the Christians more than they hate the Muslims. And you can go to our website and you can see videos of Christians being spit on in Jerusalem. And, you know, I have very big sons and I took them there, you know, and they're both kickboxers and very big. My one son's 6'6". They're very big, strong boys. I'm like, look it, we can't go to prison. Your dad runs an organization. Be very careful because, you know, this is something that when you're holding, if you're wearing a cross or a crucifix or praying the rosary down the street, you're liable to get spit on, especially if you're a little Palestinian woman, a little Armenian woman. This is what's happening. But Harrison, this is why I'm so grateful for you, your show, your audience, your courage, because I don't know about you. I used to be a Christian Zionist. I call it conservative intersectionality. It's something I didn't think about too much, but hey, I'm pro-life. I support the Second Amendment, small government. I'm a conservative. Well, I guess I'm on Team Israel. But then, it was for me really what red-pilled me on this issue was when I was in Egypt evacuating wounded Christian women and a Muslim woman, wounded women, pregnant women and children, children and pregnant women that were wounded in the war. And that's when I really began to meet the Palestinian community up close. And I realized how indoctrinated that I was, that I really had a deeply held prejudice against Palestinians. And this was as I was rescuing them, bringing them into Egypt from Gaza. Then I wrote an article when I came back called Help, I'm an Anti-Palestinian Bigot. You know, the very first thing the Vulnerable People Project did on October 7th was I greenlit, and we didn't have the budget for it, but I said, let's do it. I greenlit providing security for one of the most vulnerable Jewish communities in Africa. And this is where I was. And this is where I still am, by the way. I want all peoples, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of religion, to be protected. But now we're being asked to hold to a prejudice, a cruel bigotry, like Congressman Randy Fine holds to, where when he sees a picture of a dead Palestinian child, he says, this is great. Can I see more of these pictures? This is vicious. This is cruel. And if you look at the attack on Carrie Prejean Bowler, they're attacking her not because she's anti-Semitic, which of course she's not. They're not attacking her because she's a bigot, because of course she's not. They're attacking her because she had the nerve to go into Capitol Hill and advocate for the dignity of Palestinians.
Right.
And therefore she quote unquote must be anti-Semitic. Meanwhile, on that committee, there were people judging her, grilling her like it was a CCP struggle session. And all for what? All of them have said the most vile things advocating Israel's genocide, denying the existence of the people of Palestine, denying their dignity, denying their right to live there. I mean, Smootrich this week called for the ethnic cleansing of Christians from Bethlehem. And if this doesn't wake up America's Christians, I don't know what will. But that's why I'm grateful for you and your audience, because I think most of us probably spend most of our life in the same place. But we need to raise our voice and say, you are not going to use our money, our weapon systems to foment an ethnic cleansing. You are not going to beat, brutalize, and rob the oldest Christian community in the world. When the apostles were told to go to the ends of the earth, it was their families that found our families.
Right.
And we should have some sense of reciprocity, some sense of responsibility to them. And they want to quote Genesis 15. And of course, they twist it. They quote it out of all context. If you want to bless the descendants of Abraham, you will bless the Palestinian people. You will stand specifically and most especially with those Christians, those descendants of the very first people that were in it, that were in Jerusalem, that they walked with the apostles, you will stand with them. And I think that's what we're called to do as Christians. We're called to stand with whatever community is suffering violence and scapegoating, whether it be Yazidi or Uyghur or Palestinian Christians. This is what we're called to do. This is what we're called to do.
Absolutely. And, you know, you talk about the propaganda and the power of the propaganda. And, you know, part of, I think, the strategy that Israel pursues that is shockingly effective is the total inversion of reality. And I know our audience is pretty aware of this, but it's the idea that anytime you watch an official, Israeli official or somebody on Israeli media talk about Bethlehem or the West Bank, they'll say, you know, the Christians only can survive if Israel's in charge, and Israel is the only place in the Middle East where the Christian population is growing. They don't just say, actually, it's fine. You know, the Christians are okay. They have to go farther, and they have to say, no, actually, if we don't move in, then the Christians, you know, are at risk. I mean, how do you even deal with that level of just abject inversion of reality when it's the Israeli settlers that are viciously attacking and driving out the Christians while simultaneously saying we are the Christians' greatest protector. I think people have trouble comprehending that that's how bad the propaganda
is. Really, I've seen it when I've talked to people. You know, I've seen the confusion when they go, oh, you're saving West Bank Christians. Wow. Yeah. Those Muslims are really nasty, aren't they? Say, well, actually, no, it's the state of Israel and settlers. And they go, wait, what? No, the settlers are protecting the Christians. I'm like, well, where did you get this idea? And the other idea is, I was at an embassy party a couple of months ago and a friend of mine that works at the White House was there and he said that, that an Israeli official was ranting and raving about Jason Jones because he goes on the media and humanizes Palestinians and talks about the French fries and how good the food is and how it's safe. As you can see right there, I have Visit Palestine. Do you guys see that right there? And I want you to visit Palestine. I want you to go to the West Bank. It is not dangerous. It is the safest place on earth. I feel much more at home in the West Bank than I do in Israel. I feel welcomed. I've walked all over the West Bank by myself. You don't look more American or whiter than I do, right? You can't. And I'm usually walking around wearing my Chicago White Sox hat so people know I'm an American. You're not going to miss it. And I'm so welcomed. And I will tell you, the food is great. The people are great. I love it. And I'm sad because of my work. I don't know how much longer the state of Israel is going to even allow me back. And the idea that I can never go back to the West Bank, the idea that I will not be allowed into Gaza and meet with my team members who have been serving the orphan community and the Christian community really breaks my heart because I so love the Palestinian people. And by the way, I'm also charmed by Israelis. And hundreds of thousands of Israelis have taken to the streets and protested this barbarism and cruelty. So, you know, I brought my sons for Christmas. I said, be prepared to be charmed by everyone you meet, you know. Right. But I will say I do really feel more at home in the West Bank. When you begin to drive toward the West Bank on your map quest or Waze or whatever you use, Google Maps, it will begin to say danger area, danger zone. And I have friends that are Jewish. They go there. They're big advocates for the Palestinian people. They've gone to Gaza before the war. I've never had an incident. I have never, ever had an incident. In fact, all I've ever been is welcomed. All I've ever felt is kindness. And so we've been so lied to that the Palestinian people, by the way, are considered the most educated people in the Middle East and with much higher rates of graduate degrees than Israelis. But they talk about them as if they're stupid, low. I've heard, I think it was Ben Shapiro said that they have the lowest IQs in the Middle East. Who talks like this? Who says things like this? Smearing a people. No,
and even if it was true, it's like, okay, you know,
and what? My IQ is probably not that high. What are you saying about me?
Exactly.
You know, I'm probably the dumbest guy in every room I've ever entered. I hope that doesn't green light people to punch me in the face and steal my home. You know what I'm saying? But it's not true. You're dealing with a highly educated people. And there's also a mystery. You know, I get really upset at this. And in fact, my friends asked me to go to this conference this week. I said, I better not go. There'll probably be an incident. You guys can go without me. I don't have, the people there would not be happy at my presence and I probably wouldn't respond in a Christian way. And when I look at the Christians of the West Bank, the Palestinian Christian community, I've asked myself, how are they so magnanimous? How are they so charitable? How are they so forgiving and empathetic and understanding in the midst of all of the brutality they're suffering, their even dignity and existence denied by Christians in the West? How is it? And I thought about this. You know, in our theology as Christians, we believe that God's grace works upon our nature. So I've been a Christian. I'm 54. I've been a Christian now for 22 years. So God's grace has been working on me. God's grace works on Christian families. God's grace works on Christian communities and people. When you go and meet the Christians in Gaza or the Christians in Jerusalem or in the West Bank, you're meeting a Christian community that has been there since the first century. God's grace has been working on these families for 2,000 years. And it's something that is really, really noticeable. And that's one of the reasons why my heart breaks at the thought I may never be allowed into Israel again, because I really enjoy and I love going to the Holy Land. Obviously, to go to the Church of the Nativity and to walk where the apostles walked. But for me, it's more the living stones all these friends that I now have, these Palestinians in this community, that the idea that I can never go see again and they're not allowed to leave is heartbreaking to me. But I would encourage everyone, go to the West Bank, and not on an Israeli state-sponsored Potemkin Village propaganda tour.
Right.
Just go by yourself with your friends and wander around, and you will be charmed. You will fall in love. You will see the truth. Go meet with the people. I was just in Tebe, the only 100% Christian village left in the West Bank that is under constant and brutal assault by settlers. I was in Ramallah. It's 80% Muslim, but the mayor is Christian. They voted for a Christian, and I've met and was charmed by these people. You know, go all over the West Bank. Don't just stop in Bethlehem. Go to Tebe, go to Ramallah, explore, and you will be charmed. And the more Americans that go, and the more that Americans know the truth, the more restrained I pray the state of Israel is in this, what Smootrich is calling for, openly, an ethnic cleansing.
Yeah. And they're clearly hell bent on this, and they're doing it. And, you know, I don't have a hell of a lot of faith that they're going to, you know, wake up to, you know, the reality of what they're doing and go, gee, we're kind of being jerks here. So like, it's going to take, you know, an outside force to stop them, right? If America were to actually put their foot down and say, you got to stop this or there's going to be a problem, you know, that would have an effect. But short of that, like, what can people do? Because the way it's set up now, the settlers are able to go out and attack Palestinians, but the Palestinians fight back. The IDF will arrest the Palestinians. So it's not like you can fight back.
Shoot you on the spot. My friend, a young woman, they took her home. They demolished it. And they beat her up, and she was arrested. She was arrested. This is from former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett in the press today. No one will love Israel, so they will have to fear us.
Yep.
They're talking about us. They're talking to us. This was Smootrich yesterday. Oh, just yesterday, settlers entered the Palestinian land, a Christian land in the West Bank. They vandalized it. They took down the fence. They ripped up the olive trees. And no arrests were made every single day. So when you go to SaveWestBankChristians.com, we will be updating every attack every day across the West Bank. And we are building out a communication system to get this information daily to the Christian press, to the Christian community. And you can bet we're focusing on Iowa for the Iowa straw poll to prepare Iowa. We're focusing on Michigan and Pennsylvania. And so we will make sure that people are educated on these issues. And it's not just, by the way, the state of Israel. I have to say, in India, the rise of Hindu nationalism, right-wing, what they call Hinduva, assaults on Christians in one state alone last year, 300 churches were burned down.
Oh, wow.
In one Indian state alone. An evangelical Christian pastor was forced a couple of weeks ago to eat cow manure. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing the rise of brutality against Christians, of course, in Africa, Nigeria. The Numa Mountains of Sudan is under relentless attack from Khartoum. We have what's happening in India and the CCP. Turkey, Israel, and Azerbaijan partnered together 2 years ago to ethnically cleanse a Christian community from Artsakh that had been there since the third century, and we were silent. And if we as Christians can't stand with the persecuted church, it's really heartbreaking to me. There have never been Christians with more power and influence than those of us here, American Christians today. We have access to media. We have access to wealth. We have access to influence. And this is a privilege that we need to steward. Yeah. And in Ecclesiastes 4:1, King Solomon said, I looked all over the world and all I see is oppression. And on the side of the oppressor is power. And on the side of the oppressed, there is no one. That was true when Solomon said that. But today there's the body of Christ, the community of believers across ecclesial communities, evangelical, mainland Protestants, Catholics, Orthodox, all of us together. Where there is oppression, we should be found. Where there are orphans, we should be found. Where there are widows, there we should be found. Where there are children missing limbs, freezing to death, dying from exposure, like in Gaza, we should be found. And that's why I'm proud to say at VPP, we provided every Christian family a pop-up home this Christmas season, and we will be advocating for the Christians and persecuted communities in the West Bank and around the world will continue.
It's just incredible work. People can find that by going to the Vulnerable People Project Com. Can you stay for the rest of the hour? Can you stay for the next segment?
Oh, I'd be honored to.
Okay. I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to, but we got to stick with this, cause there's a lot of topics that are involved with this that I need to get to the bottom of. We'll be right back, folks.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said sure he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah, I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshow.com. It will certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
It's throughout. I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I got to get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, thealexjonesshow.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it from SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psycho. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first. And then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'd be like a restaurant. I ain't going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Gentlemen, this is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're covering a very important topic with Jason Jones right now. But I got to tell you, folks, you only got a few more hours. If you want to support us and get the best discount that you'll ever have on TheAlexJonesStore.com, 52% off site-wide right now, but only until midnight tonight. And we will not be on the air if you don't support us. We need your support. We rely and require your support to continue to operate in the way that we do, but we make it so easy for you to support us because you get a fantastic product that would be well worth the price at full price. We knock off 52% from that price, and you can shop happily knowing that you support this outlet and our really indefatigable quest for the truth, justice, and just all the wonderful things in the world. And it's hard to even talk about this stuff when you know how evil the world is. But, you know, the merchandise, the T-shirts and hats and hoodies are some of the coolest products we have on the site. I know our supplements are, you know, better than anybody's, but I love the T-shirts that we have. And we have, of course, some funny ones like the Quality Leering Center that, you know, will go mostly unnoticed by people, but anybody who gets the joke will immediately become your friend. That's very fun. I love that. This is probably like my favorite new hoodie. It's really a bright red. It's the Desvolt No Retreat, No Surrender hoodie. And anytime we have a lot of just classic Americana stuff, right? 1776 with the Betsy Ross flag, America, Liberty Supply Company, 1776, Live Free or Die. That stuff's pretty safe. Everybody loves America. Who's American? Everybody's down with that. As soon as you start like showing other symbols like the cross, I get messages from people. Don't you know? Oh, what? Why are you using that cross? That's the Jerusalem cross. That's the, oh, so you're saying the Crusaders? You must be a Jesuit. And it's like, guys, can we calm down? It's a cross. It represents Christianity. It represents what we as crusaders for Christianity need to do, which is armor ourselves in the armor of God and go out and fight for what's right. That's what it represents. It's always very frustrating. It's like no matter what cross you use, somebody's going to have a problem with it. When in reality, right now, we all as Christians need to be coming together of all denominations, all proclivities, to recognize that above it all, we are all Christian. We all worship Jesus Christ, and we're all under threat right now from a combined satanic multicultural attack. I mean, Jason Jones was going over Nigeria and the West Bank, all these places where Christians are being attacked. But let's not forget two churches in Germany were deliberately burned down in the last 24 hours, right? So Europe's not, you know, safe from this attack either. So I do hope you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Jason, I want to go to one video here really quick. It was taken, I believe, in the West Bank, and you get to see how the IDF is shepherding and chaperoning a bunch of West Bank settlers, Israeli settlers, who are mostly from, like, America, by the way. But you can see the way they treat the Palestinians like they're less than nothing, because we can go to the extremes, which are beyond absurd, like horrifying footage of people being dragged behind cars, and like it's crazy. But this type of stuff is just the everyday sort of quotidian repression that the Palestinians have to deal with, which as an American who loves freedom maybe to an unhealthy degree, I can't imagine being subject to this level of military repression on a constant basis. And it's just a little reminder of the everyday indignities that the Palestinian people are forced to bear under the Israeli leadership. So here's a quick video from a man, I believe named, his last name is Castle, but he was there as an American, Matt Castle. Here it is.
Okay, so here you can see the Israeli soldiers are now forcing all of these shops to close because there's a tour of Israeli settlers who are here. Can we go this way? Why? I'm an American journalist. Are we not allowed to go this way? Huh? Can you explain why this area is being closed? Okay, I'm walking.
One by one, Palestinians are forced to close their shops and leave the area. People wanting to return to their homes are prevented from doing so.
Can you explain just to me what's happening exactly?
Here?
Yeah.
No, I can't explain. It's not your job to picture here.
So the settlers went on what they called the tour of the old city. It's strange just how normalized this situation is for Palestinians, where their lives can be disrupted in such a way on a weekly, if not daily, basis.
Yeah, so again, I couldn't imagine living under those conditions. Jason Jones is my guest. You can follow him on X at Jason Jones VPP. VPP stands for Vulnerable People Project. You can follow them at vulnerable_VPP, and you can go to vulnerablepeopleproject.com. And of course, Jason hosts the Jason Jones podcast. The Jason Jones Show, which is a podcast. You also have this, the Vulnerable People Project urgent plea to save West Bank Christians announced on Ash Wednesday. So this is your announcement today. Save West Bank Christians. People can go to the Vulnerable People Project and help you guys just get awareness out about what's happening in Bethlehem of all places. And, Bethlehem, everybody knows Bethlehem, but it is always astonishing me reading the New Testament and hearing, you know, Jesus was walking through Gaza, and you just think, oh my gosh, like what, how did the Holy Land where Jesus walked and ministered become this hellscape of death? It's just horrifying. So tell us what the Vulnerable People Project is doing and how people can support you guys with the Save West Bank Christians Project.
Well, right now we have a jobs program in the West Bank to try to keep young Christians to stay in the West Bank. But we really want to President Trump to know that we stand with him. Does his Secretary of State stand with him? I don't think so. Does his ambassador to Israel stand with him? I don't think so. The President of the United States needs to know we stand with him. And he has made it very clear that he wants to prioritize protecting vulnerable Christian communities. There is no Christian community in the world more vulnerable than Christians in Gaza and Christians in the West Bank, period. And so if we can't stand with them, who can we stand with? Because we can pull the leash of this little welfare state that commits these abuses with our money. Right. And a lot of them are dual citizens. Like you said, a lot of these settlers are Americans. So if we can't stop the persecution of Christians in the West Bank, you think in a country the size of Nigeria with a complex array of threats and problems, we're going to be able to protect the Christians in Nigeria? So the president said he wants to prioritize protecting Christians, vulnerable Christians, number one. Number two, the president of the United States, Donald Trump, has been very clear. No more illegal settlements. All of these settlements in the West Bank are illegal. And how does Israel respond? How does Netanyahu respond? How does Smotrich respond? By stepping on the gas pedal, by greenlighting settlements like in Shtema that will be the end of the Christian communities in Bethlehem. And this video that you just showed makes your blood boil. But let me tell you this. It makes your blood boil, but that's minor. And as Americans, remember, I was on your show. I was the first American arrested protesting COVID. And, that was the first day of COVID restrictions. Could you imagine Americans having to live the way Palestinians have to live? We wouldn't settle. We wouldn't take it for an hour. They'll shut off your travel so you can't go visit you can't take your child to school. It'll be a 2-mile drive. It'll take you 5 hours. They'll make it so you can't go to work. And with each of these new approved settlements, it makes it increasingly more challenging for the Palestinians. And so what happens is they give up and they leave. Yeah. And they move to the United States, they move to Europe, they move to South America. And what's interesting is so many of those who are calling for annihilation of the Palestinian people are also complaining about emigration to Europe and the United States.
Right.
Well, maybe we should stop a regime change wars, like, God forbid, one is about to launch tonight in Iran. I pray not. But with each of these regime change wars, what do we get? We get flooded by migrants. They don't want to leave Iraq. They don't want to leave Syria. They're running for their lives. They're running from a catastrophes that we caused, that Benjamin Netanyahu came to our Congress and it went into our White Houses and begged for.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's, again, just the I guess for lack of a better term, the chutzpah of Israel. And, you know, I can bring it in because I re-downloaded the video because I knew I was going to want to play it, of Donald Trump again. And no, I mean, he is not the type of person that will always, be straight up front about what he wants. Usually there's a question, he'll say, well, we'll see about that and we'll see. But when he was asked about West Bank settlements, he said, no, it's not going to happen. They're not going to annex West Bank, not on my watch. And yet here they go. I mean, here they are from today. I think this may have been the Washington Post. As Israel takes steps to claim land in West Bank, U.S. stands by. Israel has moved aggressively in recent days to deepen its control over the occupied West Bank, unilaterally adopting policies that analysts say represent a major shift towards annexation and appear to defy President Donald Trump, who said that he opposes annexation but has not publicly pushed back on the escalating Israeli measures. This month, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's security cabinet, in a closed-door meeting, adopted measures to make it easier for settlers to purchase land and to circumvent the Palestinian Authority in areas it has controlled since the 1995 agreement under the Oslo Accords. The move was widely condemned in the Arab world and globally as a violation of international law and an undoing of decades-old regional security agreements. And it goes on and on. But, I mean, they are just aggressively slamming the gas pedal and trying to settle the West Bank in an effort to annex it. And nobody's doing anything about it. So why would Trump even say, no, you're not allowed to do this, if he's not willing to back that up? Now they're just making a fool out of him.
Well, do you remember when, I think it was on July 5th, I was intimately involved for a year and a half, and I'm still involved in a way, in evacuating American citizens and our allies when Afghanistan collapsed.
Right.
And on July 5th of 2021, Joe Biden went and told the world, you're not going to see helicopters on our embassy. This is not going to be a repeat of Saigon. And what did we see 6 weeks later? Not even 6 weeks later. We saw helicopters on the roofs of our embassies as our allies were being gunned down in the streets. This is going to be President Trump's Abbeygate. This is going to be President Trump's Afghanistan or Saigon. The American Christians are waking up, and they're waking up fast. In fact, I've never seen polls shift on any topic so dramatically, so rapidly in my life, and I don't think in the history of this country. And I don't think the politicians have realized yet how things have changed. And the river that they step in the next election, and especially the river that those folks who want to run for president are going to step in 2028, it's a different river than they think that they're in.
Right.
And so if President Trump wants to be remembered as the Christian that sat on his hands as the state of Israel ethnically cleansed the oldest Christian community in the world, that is going to be his legacy. And Israel is very clear. Once these Palestinians leave, they are never allowed to return.
Right.
And this is the heartbreaking thing for them. They're not even allowed to go from, you know, sometimes they can't go from one part of the West Bank to the other, let alone to Gaza, from Gaza to the West Bank. And it's I'm always embarrassed as an American with my blue passport, because I can go to Jordan, I can come to the West Bank, I can go to Tel Aviv, I can come back, and they're like, you know, my Palestinian friends in Jordan are like, my dream would be to go to where my family's from in Haifa. But that's a dream that I'll never be able to experience. And then yet there I am. I can do it. I can visit both places on the same day.
Wow. Yeah, it's an apartheid system, right? And I'm always, kind of like what we were saying about the inversion of the propaganda, how they'll make official statements saying the only place Christians are safe in the Middle East is Israel. And it's just a complete reversal and inversion of what reality is. In the same way, I feel like sometimes I sound crazy describing the behavior of the settlers. And because you do, you sound like a crazy, just like psychotic Israel hater when you're like, these people they're evil. But then it's like, you know, I've got video of them just like breaking the legs of lambs for no reason, dragging Palestinians behind cars for fun. And it's like, what is behind the brutality? Why are they so brutal? How does this play into it? Because they could probably achieve what they wanted to without doing the horrible, brutal stuff, but they do it like on purpose almost. Why burn down the olive groves? Like, why are they so brutal? Is that a part of the psychological operation against Palestinians? And how do you handle this? Because like I said, it's like it causes such an emotional reaction to me. I then sound crazy being like, I hate these people. But it's like when you see what they do, it's hard not to hate them. What's your opinion on just the brutality and the intensity of the West Bank settlers?
Yeah, well, they're propagandized. In fact, can you believe I have a friend who is a settler outside of Bethlehem? He's a man I have known through the film industry. He's actually a guy that I adored. I let him know I was in the neighborhood. I wanted to meet with him. And he said, no, it's so dangerous. I can't meet you there. They're going to kill me. So they believe it's us or them. They have never had a proper relationship. They've never been able to make a relationship with the Palestinians. Of course, the Mizrahi Jews, those Jewish families that never left Palestine, that have been there for centuries or longer, they have a family and cultural memory of what it was like prior to the State of Israel. They don't have a fear or hostility towards the Palestinians the way these settlers coming from Eastern Europe, coming from the United States, will have, because they're really propagandized to believe that that these people want to kill us. It's either us or them. And then when you're with the Palestinian community, it's jarring because I was even expecting them to hold to deeply held anti-Semitic prejudice. And when I couldn't find it, I'm sure it's there. I'm sure, you know, every people has people with bigotry, but it's something I couldn't find. But then my Israeli friends speak so openly and shamelessly, clearly animated by prejudice. Randy Fine is just a perfect example, or Smootrich. You just look at their rhetoric, or you just go to the Epstein files and put in the word goy.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to go there, but to think that there is a relationship between Epstein Island and the state of Israel and the brutality of Palestinians and the killing of Americans and the raping of Americans.
And the dehumanization
Yeah, put in the word goy and it's there, and the no respect for non-Jews. And it's hard for those of us who've been really, history has taught us to be hypersensitive to Jews being victims of ethno-nationalist hatred. And that's a good thing. And it's hard for us to understand that Jews could be animated with an ethno-nationalist bigotry. By the way, born around the same time in Europe, this is a European ideology. It is not a Semitic ideology. Zionism, as we come to understand it, political Zionism was birthed in the 19th century. You can look at so many weird movements and cults like the Nation of Islam, or, you know, we can just look at all these strange movements, or National Socialism, which came out of movements that were similar to this in Germany in the late 19th century. We're dealing with a virulent ethno-nationalist ideology that was birthed in Europe that foments a viciousness and cruelty towards the Palestinian people. But what's striking is how Christians sipping their pumpkin spice latte and their local Christian bookstore, reading their glossy Joel Osteen. No, the other guy, the Zionist, the Christian Zionist, you know, you can read these books, you know, and you see these nice guys in their sweater vests sipping their pumpkin spice lattes. And then out of their mouth says, all Palestinians are Amalekites and must be killed.
Crazy.
You're like, wow, where did you get that Gnostic, satanic, vicious, cruel propaganda? Oh, at the book on the bookshelf of your local Christian bookstore.
Right.
And you purchase that book and you read it while sipping your pumpkin spice latte. And then he gets in your Prius and you go home and watch Wheel of Fortune. You know, but what we're seeing now in these churches, these ecclesial communities that promote Christian Zionism, they're dying. The under 30s are fleeing these communities. Right. And I do believe that evangelical Christianity, as we know it in the United States, was murdered in Gaza by the state of Israel because young people are repulsed by Zionist rhetoric.
And you know what? You know what the other sad part of that is? Because you're exactly right. I'm sorry to interrupt, but what happens is you have people believing that supporting Israel is tied up in their faith. The dangerous thing is they see the truth about Israel and they think, well, my faith must not be true. So, you know, I think that is like a big hurdle to get over for a lot of evangelicals whose support of Israel is tied up with their faith, and they have a hard time coming to terms with what they learn about Israel because they think it makes them less Christian. That's a false dichotomy, y'all. You're just as Christian not supporting Israel, but people fall for that lie.
No, you know, I agree with you 100%. What I love about being on your show is I'll go to the grocery store tonight, I'll go to the HEB, and five people will come up to me. And it's very diverse. They're not all the same religion. They're not all the same political spectrum. I think people would be shocked to know how diverse your audience is. And what scares me is a lot of people are abandoning their Christian faith. Now, look, I'm Catholic, and I'm a Catholic Christian, but they're abandoning their Christian faith for disgusting, violent, Gnostic, hateful ideologies grounded in ethno-nationalist racism. So imagine that you would flee Christianity because you're repulsed by ethno-nationalist ideology, and it can push you in one direction to vile, pagan, Gnostic, ethno-nationalist ideologies. And on the other hand, it can push you to the radical left. And so we're seeing young people, a lot of young men being pushed to the post-Christian right that fundamentally denies human dignity. You know what I love about being Christian? What I love, because I'm a passionate guy, and God forbid my emotions drove my thoughts. I love that our faith tells us we have no other. That the settler and the Palestinian are my brothers and they're my sisters, and that I need to order my life as a Christian to serve them, to lead them through my example and through my words to what we were created to do, which was a very simple mission statement. Not easy, but it's a very simple mission statement. Love God and love your neighbor. And as young people, I mean, they're being brutalized. Look, imagine being 16 years old and reading the Epstein files on your phone.
Right.
Is this not going to radicalize young people? Are you kidding me? Imagine finding out that the job you dreamt of having isn't going to be available because of AI. These young people are facing a serious crisis. Yeah. And virulent ideologies will be rising up to give them what they feel they need. But what they need is the gospel of Jesus Christ. What they need to know is that we should love even our enemy. And at the end of the day, our enemy isn't even our enemy. It's our brother that's a lost sheep that needs to be brought into the fold. And I'm very grateful for this. But I can understand young people being radicalized by the viciousness and the cruelty and the rhetoric. And so I think it's very important that those of us who are Christians who are reject this are loud. Not just for the Palestinians, but I'm a grandfather. I have 7 children, 4 grandchildren. And I worry that my children and grandchildren could be scandalized by this rhetoric and by this violence and by this bigotry and by this cruelty to abandoning the faith that Jesus gave us is what we, there is no longer Gentile or Jew. There's no other. Yeah. I have no other. They can other me. That's great. That gives me empathy. That makes me thoughtful, but I'm not, by God's grace, I'm not going to other anyone. And if I saw civilians in Tel Aviv suffering the way that civilians in Beit Zohar and Tebe and Bethlehem are suffering, I would be on your show advocating for them.
Right.
If there were those denying the dignity of Jews and saying they weren't human and they were animals and that they should be removed and sent somewhere else, I'd be advocating for them.
Because that is
the vocation of the Christian.
And it's hard not to fall into that feedback loop where you see how vicious and hateful some of these people are, and you think, okay, that's the rules of the game. If they're going to, you know, they say that we all deserve to die because of what we believe, well, then they all deserve to die because of what they believe. And it's like, that's the false dichotomy. You don't want to fall into that. The only way to break this cycle of Nazi, Jew, Islamic extremist, the Jewish extremist, it's like, you got to break out. The only way to defeat this is love. And as cheesy as that sounds, it's undeniably true, because you see the way that the extremism on one side only begets extremism on the other side.
You know, Harrison, it sounds cheesy, right, for two men to sit here and say all you need is love. But love is the fabric of the universe. Love, God created us out of an act of love. And he created us to love. My mother passed away yesterday. And she was an atheist her entire life. And 10 days ago, she asked to be baptized, and the priest pointed at me and said, you're her godfather. And I thought, how do I get to partner with God to help usher my mother into eternity? And she partnered with God to usher me into time. This is what it's all about. This is the ashes, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I want to order my life for eternity. I want to order my life for eternity. And I think the one thing that we can do right now is stand with the persecuted, the lepers of our age, the vulnerable Christians in the West Bank, and stand and let President Trump know your words echo our heart. The settlements are illegal. The settlements are brutal. We need to stand with persecuted Christians. Let's start in the West Bank.
Amen. Wow. Just incredibly powerful. Jason Jones. Follow him on X. Jason Jones VPP. VulnerablePeopleProject.com. VulnerablePeopleProject.com. Save West Bank Christians. The project just launched today. Share it. Support it. We do a lot of good work. Thank you, Mr. Jones, for being on with us today.
Thank you, brother.
People can use this as a teaching moment. That, you know, I see a lot of these people out there who think they can imitate Alex Jones, and they have never understood the amount of work that goes in to the detailed reports that you do. But the second part is, okay, if you're out there and you want to be Alex Jones or replicate Alex Jones, Alex teaches you the way to do it. Just pay attention. One is learn history. Understand history. Understand what templates to look for. Once you understand that, you understand what the play is going to look like. And then you're just looking for who to cast in what roles. because you understand the broader course of history, how these things tend to operate, how assassinations tend to occur, how cover-ups tend to happen, how false flags occur, how staged events occur, how also could the various forms of COINTELPRO type psyops to infiltrate dissident movements to distract them from the real conspiracy into fake conspiracy in order to feed a fake conspiracies into people who otherwise would be investigating the real conspiracy. Also to act as a discrediting agent. So learn the methodologies, learn how to look at what's, how to review sources, how to understand the psychology of the participants involved. Once you understand that, you can be much more accurate and predictive at what took place with more explanatory power and more predictive capacity. And that's what Alex does, is massive amounts of work that starts with understanding history.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing. And you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalists. Get ultra methylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.